And that is right. Don't laugh at me. This here is Big Dot with you on another Jumbo Braille program here on the Six Eyes Radio Network, saying welcome one, welcome all to the program tonight, especially our surrounding city and states and our countries near and far, as well as those who called 424-243-9617. Again, 424-243-9617. Press number one, join the conversation. You can ask your questions, give your comments, or just plain and simple, let us know how we're doing and say hi. And Ruth, we just wanted to, we're going to be in a few here talking to give a summation of where we've been in our book of baby love. But for us right now, Ruth, who do we got with us?
Well, we have you, Jim, me, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, Band of Angels. That's pretty much it.
Okay. Well, then we'll go right into our summation here. Where we've been so far in...
Hold on. We got Sandy.
Ah, okay. Well, open up his mic there because we'll let him say a little bit about his upcoming program coming the last Thursday of this month. Maybe he can encourage people to join us on the last Thursday.
Okay, he's on.
Hello?
Okay, Sandy.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe you could encourage people, if you got a specific topic that you're thinking of on the last Thursday for your handyman thing, or are you just going to be having just basic open mics?
Open mic.
Okay, so, well, I've got a good question. I'll be asking you, so just be prepared. I've got a couple wild questions for you. And I'm going to be coming, I'm going to let you know that from my angle, I'll be coming from the standpoint of a person who has no specialized regular tools to do things and some basic things that people might need to do around the house. So I'm going to get ready to trip you up. So hopefully you're ready for me, okay?
Okay.
Emily's on too.
All right. And so, just be ready. Last Thursday of this month, you'll be on. And just anything specific you want the listeners to know?
No. Not really.
Okay. So.
Anybody wants to know, I'll try to help them out.
Okay. All right, and Emily.
Yes.
So, how you doing tonight?
Yeah. Bean drove. Flipping nuts over here. Because I think you could hear what's going on in the background.
Right. But it looks like you got your phone working again.
Dad forgot he had an actual USB plug, the cord part of it. So what I did to play it smart, I actually plugged the one end of the USB plug in the side of my laptop and the other one in my phone like it's supposed to be. And if that dog don't shut up tonight, sorry, listeners, but I will tie the dog's tongue in a knot.
Okay. So what we're going to do here tonight, just to let you know.
Hey, got a question for you, Kenny.
Okay.
Just a real quick one. Was that our favorite Uncle Sandy I heard on there?
Yep, he's kind of encouraging everybody for the last Thursday night for his program of the Handyman Show. And so just letting everybody know that he's going to be on.
Okay. Hey, Uncle Sandy, how you doing?
All right.
Yeah, able to get you with a good question that might stump you. I don't know, but I'm going to try it.
Okay.
Well, he's good at what he does. I'll back him up.
All right. So tonight, just to let you guys know, tonight we got a book that we'll be listening to. It's Baby Love by Katherine Anderson. And so far where we've been in the book is Rafe Kendrick. He's a multimillionaire, and he was bumming the rails because he had been depressed from losing his first wife and his children in a car wreck. And thus, he's a rancher. And all of a sudden, he runs into, in a boxcar, this lady, Maggie. And she's running away from her abusive father-in-law, okay? And she's running away from this guy, trying to escape with her child. And that's where we were, is he had finally got her off the boxcar, and they're in this hotel room. And he's trying to help her out because he cleaned her cuts and stuff, and is trying to help her out to heal up in a little bit. And that's where they were last in the book, where we were. And so that's where we are now. So everybody ready for a good reading tonight?
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
All right, Ruth, if you want to give us the preliminaries, we'll get started tonight.
Okay, tonight we'll be reading Book 1, Baby Love, by Katherine Anderson. Narrator Kristen Allison will be reading chapters 4 and 5, I think. And we hope all the listeners enjoy.
It'll be 4, 5, 6, and 7, Ruth.
4, 5, 6, and 7. Okay. Sorry about that. We hope all the listeners enjoy. Take it away, Kenny, on the Six Eyes Radio Network. Yeah.
Chapter 4. Wind buffeted Rafe as he strode along the sidewalk toward the restaurant at the corner of the block. He shoved his hands deep into the lined pockets of his overcoat and hunched his shoulders. When he came upon a drugstore with colorful Halloween displays in the windows, seeing the jack-o'-lantern made his heart catch. He drew to a stop and stared, waiting for the pain to strike, as it always did when something reminded him unexpectedly of his family. Only the pain was no longer there. A sad acceptance had taken its place. He closed his eyes, searching within himself almost frantically for the grief that had been a part of him for so long. Its gradual lessening was one of the reasons he'd been drinking so heavily these last few months. He was starting to get over losing his family. How could that be? What kind of man was he to forget them so quickly? Forcing himself to move, he made his way almost blindly along the sidewalk. Damn, he needed a swig of whiskey. Strike that. He needed an entire bottle. Oblivion. That was what he wanted. So he wouldn't have to deal with the fact that he no longer wanted to curl up somewhere and die when he remembered his family. As though in answer to a prayer, an overhead sign loomed in his blurred vision. Liquor store. Rafe's stride faltered, and the money in his front trouser pocket seemed to sear his left thigh. He'd gotten $700 for his wedding ring. Why shouldn't he buy something for himself with some of it? A bell tinkled as he pushed open the door. His hands began to shake, vaguely aware of a tall, thin woman watching him from behind the cash register. He headed straight for the ceiling-high shelves of booze that lined the right wall, his familiarity with the labels leading him unerringly to the whiskey section. Early times. Rafe curled his hand around the neck of a half-gallon bottle, his mouth cottony with a raging thirst. "That'll be $23.50, the woman said when Rafe approached the counter. "Plastic or paper?" For a moment, he wasn't sure what she meant. Then he realized she was asking about his preference in sex. Paper. He set the bottle on the counter, then drew back the tail of his coat and shoved up the sleeve to dive his hand into his jeans pocket. As he pulled out the wad of money and started sorting through the bills, his gaze snagged on the inside of his left wrist. A shade lighter than the rest of him, squiggly little lines marbled his skin. It looked as if he'd trickled bleach on himself. Flashing back to the motel room, Rafe remembered dribbling baby formula on the inside of his wrist. He stared at the irregular lines, realizing that their paler brown color was his skin showing through the gray-brown buildup of grime. Jesus, was he that filthy? It hadn't been that long since he'd had a shower. He shifted his gaze to his shirt cuff. Not only was it badly frayed at the edge, but it was nearly black in places with ground-in dirt. He could remember a time when he had showered and changed clothes from the skin out twice a day. Uncertain how long he'd been standing there staring at his wrist, Rafe jerked his gaze back to the clerk. She peered at him from behind a pair of rhinestone glasses, her brown hair tidily styled to frame an aging face. She looked like the type who used a magnifying glass to pluck her eyebrows. Fiery heat crawled up his neck. "That'll be $23.50, she repeated, clearly ill at ease. He looked at the bottle of whiskey. For well over a year, he'd been aware he was hooked on alcohol, but he'd laughingly told himself he couldn't be classified as a problem drinker until he decided to quit and couldn't. Since he had no intention of quitting, wherein lay the problem? Now that he was sober, he couldn't quite see the humor in that way of thinking. He was a bum, a filthy bum. He lived from one moment to the next, wondering how he would get his hands on the next bottle. Less than an hour ago, he'd mixed formula, handling the nipple of Jamie's baby bottle. He had washed his hands first, but gazing down at them now, he saw the black under his fingernails and on his knuckles. Clean? Not by a long shot. And he sure as hell couldn't claim to be germ-free. "Mister, you gonna buy this whiskey or stand there while it ages?" Rafe closed his fist over the money. He retreated a step from the counter, his gaze locked on the bottle. "I've changed my mind. I already rang it up." Rafe kept backing away. Just looking at the whiskey made him shake. But the yearning would have to keep until he parted company with Maggie and Jamie. He had to think of that baby, damn it. Maggie couldn't care for him by herself right now, and if Rafe meant to assume her responsibilities while she got a few hours rest, he'd be damned if he'd do it drunk. Maggie surfaced from a deep sleep to the sound of water running. She strained to open her eyes. The ceiling looked unfamiliar. Bleary-eyed, she scanned her surroundings, remembered Rafe Kendrick bringing her to a motel room, and turned her head to check on Jamie. The baby no longer lay beside her, Alarm registered in her foggy mind. Gone? Oh, God. Pain exploded the length of her body as she started to sit up. She gasped and grabbed her side, scarcely able to breathe. Then she heard a deep, resonant voice coming from the bathroom. Aren't you a pistol? Look at those fists and feet go. You like getting a bath, I can tell that much. Water splashed. Well, you're not alone, little guy. I kind of enjoyed my shower, too. It feels good to be clean, doesn't it? Rafe. He was giving Jamie a bath? Maggie sank back against the pillows and drew the blankets to her chin, relieved beyond measure that she needn't move. Everything hurt, even her butt. She let her eyes drift closed, listening to the rich timbre of his voice and wondering yet again if the man was heaven-sent. How strange that her savior should be a ragged drunk in a sheepskin coat and droopy Stetson. Maybe, she decided drowsily, he was her guardian angel in disguise. Or a frog who was actually a handsome prince who had come to carry them off into the sunset on his prancing steed. The thought made Maggie smile slightly, for she'd long since stopped believing in fairy tales. That was for little girls her sister Heidi's age, and sadly, even for them, happy endings were few and far between. Weighted with exhaustion, Maggie drifted in a sleepy haze. She felt as if she'd been rolled up in a heavy rug. She wasn't sure how much time passed. It might have been a minute or an hour. When she heard the bathroom door open, she struggled to lift her eyelashes. As the man standing at the foot of the bed came into focus, Maggie blinked, convinced she must be imagining him. He resembled Rafe Kendrick. His hair was jet black at any rate, and he had the same dark skin, smoky blue eyes, and sharply bridged nose. But there all similarity ended. Not only was this man beardless, but he had short hair, looked well scrubbed, and wore clothes so spanking new they still bore package creases. He was also one of the handsomest men Maggie had ever clapped eyes on, the very epitome of tall, dark, and dangerous. His new blue chambray shirt was open at the collar, revealing a V of bronze, muscular chest, lightly dusted with black hair. No question about it, she was dreaming. Cradling Jamie in one arm, he glanced down. I can't look that different. Except for the clothes, all I did was get a haircut and shower and shave. Where had her drunken bomb gone? Only a bit ago, she'd been likening this man to a frog. And now, as though she'd conjured him up, the handsome prince had materialized. He brushed at a horizontal crease in the new jeans, which, unlike his old pair, fit him properly, revealing the powerful contours of his legs. I thought I ought to clean up. When he met her gaze again, she glimpsed a ruddy flush creeping up his tanned throat. Handling the baby and all that, I didn't want to. He shrugged and thrust his fingers through his hair, which fell across his forehead in glistening, unruly waves the instant he released it. And I just thought I should clean up is all. Clean up didn't describe the transformation, and since when did Dream Prince's blush? A deep crease appeared in his lean cheek as his firm lips tipped into a crooked grin. Oh, God, he was drop-dead gorgeous. Maggie closed her eyes, too exhausted to deal with this right now. With all the hair and baggy clothes, he'd looked older. Now he didn't look a day over 30. Remembering how she'd let him doctor her cuts, her heart flip-flopped. He'd seen her in the nude. Close to it, anyway. And he'd touched her practically everywhere. That had been embarrassing enough before. Now it was mortifying. Maggie, he said softly. She kept her eyes closed, pretending to be asleep. It wasn't a difficult ruse to pull off. Right now, her throbbing body craved rest, the need overriding all else. Later. She would worry about everything later. As that thought sifted through her mind, Maggie let the warm, fuzzy blackness settle over her again. She was only distantly aware of the sounds Rafe made as he cared for Jamie, his deep voice murmuring nonsensical phrases, paper sacks rustling, the clank of something metal in the bathroom, and then water running. In her sleepy mind's eye, she pictured him as the ragged cowboy again, far more comfortable with that image than with the tall, ebon-haired man who'd taken his place. Sometime later, she felt the grasp of his hand on her shoulder. Hey, sunshine, you think you can wake up enough to swallow? You need to eat. The tantalizing smell of food wafted to her nose, and her stomach rumbled loudly in response. I guess that answers my question. Here, let me help you roll over. Maggie surrendered herself to the gentle strength of his hands. His dark face swam before her. When she felt him tuck the blankets over her chest, she wanted to thank him, but even as she groped for the words, she forgot exactly what it was she wanted to say. Don't try to talk. Just let me get some soup, don't you? Then you can go back to sleep. A spoon touched her mouth. The wonderful taste of vegetable soup flowed over her tongue. She swallowed without even attempting to chew. The heat of the liquid made her stomach clench with urgent hunger. I didn't know what kind of soup you liked. I settled for vegetable beef. A paper napkin grazed her chin. Sorry, it's hard not to spill with you lying down. Maggie tensed to sit up, but he immediately pressed her back. Don't move. We can manage well enough this way. another spoonful of soup filled her mouth. I gave his nibs a bath, then I fed him 2 ounces of formula just to tide him over. She struggled to make sense of what he was saying, but try as she might, his words darted in and out of her mind. Strangely, it didn't matter. In her present state, she couldn't work up the energy to worry about much. She relaxed against the pillows. His voice reassured her, and she drifted back into the blackness, trusting him to take care of her. Rafe lightly touched a hand to Maggie's forehead. He could detect no sign of fever, but even so, he couldn't help worrying. He'd never seen anyone sleep this deeply. Maggie, you have to wake up now and try to feed Jamie. Her long, dark eyelashes fluttered. The next instant, Rafe found himself looking into confused brown eyes. He'd never been the sappy type, but in that moment, if he'd been asked to describe the feeling that swept over him, he would have said he felt as if he were drowning. Jamie, she repeated in a sleepy whisper, is he all right? Rafe slipped an arm behind her back to plump the pillows and prop her up. He smiled slightly, for even half awake, she clutched the covers protectively to her chest. He's fine, just hungry. He went to fetch the baby. When he swung back toward the bed, he saw that Maggie's head was already nodding. He gave her a light shake to wake her. Honey, maybe we should take you to the emergency room. No, she croaked, her eyes opening wide. I'm not sick or anything, just tired. All I need is a little more sleep, that's all. She winced as she struggled to sit straighter. Rafe couldn't determine if her breasts or ribs were causing the most pain, or if it was something else. Judging by the vicious marks he'd seen on her shins, he felt fairly certain she'd been kicked with heavy boots. What if she had internal injuries? At least she didn't have a fever. That was a good sign. And she'd kept the soup down. All right, he agreed reluctantly. I'll give it until morning. But if you're not better by then, I'm taking you to a doctor. Do we have a deal? She blinked, making an obvious effort to wake up. Yes, a deal, she replied, slurring her words slightly. She held out her arms for the baby. Hi, Sweetkins, she said softly as he gave her the infant. How's my boy? Rafe handed her a bathroom towel to drape over her shoulder while she nursed the child. After taking the rectangle of Terry, she gazed bewilderedly at it. It's to cover yourself. A flush flagged her cheeks. Oh. Rafe turned away. He found himself staring at a bare wall. Damn. He felt trapped. Being locked up in this small room with her was sheer hell. What was he supposed to do, count the hairs on his arms? He went to the window and drew back one of the sagging drapes. Leaning a shoulder against the frame, he gazed through the steamy pane at the dark, nearly empty parking lot. He could hear the sucking sounds that Jamie made as he latched onto a nipple. His stomach clenched. He hoped like hell Maggie did feel better in the morning. If he was around her much longer, he couldn't guarantee he'd be able to keep a lid on these feelings she was stirring within him. He sighed and rubbed the back of his neck, taking heart when he didn't hear Jamie start to fuss. That had to mean her milk was coming down, and that could only be a good sign. He closed his eyes, trying to blank out his thoughts. While caring for her, he'd gotten an eyeful a few times. He felt guilty about that, but in all fairness to himself, he hadn't been able to help it. He'd tried not to look, but not seeing what was right in front of his nose was damned near impossible. All afternoon and evening, one question had been circling his mind. Who? While her guard had been down, he'd been so tempted to ask her questions, specifically who had beaten her up. His sense of fair play had forced him to bite his tongue. Rafe pinched the bridge of his nose. Why pry into her personal life when he had no intention of hanging around? Come morning, he was out of here. He'd take $25 from the money he'd gotten for his ring, give Maggie the rest, and hit the road, his first stop, the liquor store. He wanted no part of a woman and baby, didn't want to care about them, and damned well wouldn't. The soft suckling sounds continued. He wished he had turned on the radio. Anything could drown it out. He knew every tug of the baby's mouth had to cause Maggie pain, that if he turned and looked, he'd see tears trailing down her pale cheeks. He rubbed a hand over his face and blinked, trying not to think about how it must be hurting her. He took a deep breath. Given the lack of complaint from the diaper section, I take it your milk is coming down? After a moment's silence, she replied in a thin voice, Yes. Rafe swallowed, his throat closing around a pocket of air like a tight fist. I know it must hurt like the very devil to nurse him. As soon as he's done, I'll bring you a cup of instant soup. I've got water heating on the hot plate. A hot plate? Did it come with the room? No, I bought a few things while I was out. I needed a way to heat water and do a little cooking. Nothing fancy. Soup and stuff like that. You bought a hot plate? There was a ring of what sounded like panic in her voice. Oh, Mr. Kendrick, you've spent enough on us as it is. I've told you and told you there's no way I can pay you back. Evidently, her life experience had taught her that men couldn't be trusted not to feel proprietary if a woman accepted help. In fact, judging by the edge of panic in her tone, he suspected some men had gotten ugly with her about it. I don't expect you to pay me back, Maggie. A hot plate must have been expensive. For some reason, that made him want to laugh. He could remember a time when a $50 bill had been small change to him. It's just a cheap one, and we needed it. What choice did I have? How much was it exactly? Rafe worked his throat to swallow again. 40-something. Don't worry about it. I've got plenty of money left. Where'd you get that much money? You didn't steal it, did you? Rafe smiled in spite of himself. He could see how she might think that. No, I didn't steal it. I hopped a ring. A ring? It must have been quite some ring. Yeah, he replied huskily. It was quite some ring. Jamie's done, she said softly. As he came about, he found himself impaled by those beautiful brown eyes. His heart caught at the shimmer of tears he saw in them. Her mouth quivered as she searched his face. Have you ever been so indebted to someone you couldn't even think how to thank him? She asked in a shaky voice. I know it irritates you, but I can't help but worry. I'm in the habit of making my own way, and I'll never be able to repay you for all this. The lump was back in Rafe's throat. Making her own way? She could barely walk. No paybacks, remember? Just knowing I've helped a little is all the thanks I need. He approached the bed, intending to take the baby from her and put him back in his makeshift bed. But once there, he sat beside her, his gaze locked on her sweet face. Dark smudges underlined her eyes, and her soft mouth was almost colorless. He cupped her cheek, trailing his thumb along her cheekbone, which felt frighteningly fragile. Noting the prideful way she held her head and the stubborn thrust of her small chin, he struggled to sort his emotions. Down for the count, flat broke, and fresh out of luck, that was Maggie. Yet she still clung to her pride. He couldn't help but admire that about her. On the other hand, though, it made for a rough going when a man was trying to help her. Maggie, I know you feel uncomfortable about telling me too much, but I've got to ask. Who beat you up? And why? She lowered her gaze, a sign to Rafe that she didn't intend to answer him. Was it Jamie's father? He lightly touched her tousled hair. The sable tendrils were as soft as silk, an incongruous contrast to her mutinous expression, which, for reasons beyond him, made him want to smile. Surely you can tell me that much. She raised her chin higher. Jamie has no father. Rafe's heart caught, for there was a wealth of pain in those four words. Everyone has a father, honey. No. Just that one word. No. The way she said it, her voice laced with stubborn denial, made him yearn to hug her. Though he knew she had to be in her early 20s, she seemed so very young right then and so horribly alone. Jamie is my baby, she whispered. Nobody's but mine. On his birth certificate, I listed his father as unknown, and that's the way it's going to stay. Rafe sighed. Someday he'll ask about his dad, you know. Is that what you're going to tell him, that his father is unknown? Yes. That won't reflect very well on you, he pointed out. Better that he believe his mother was promiscuous than to learn the truth about... She gulped and closed her eyes. He has no father. End of subject. Please don't ask me about it again. Of all the women he had ever met, she was the least likely to have been promiscuous. Rafe had a host of flaws, but being a poor judge of character wasn't one of them. The first time he'd ever looked into Maggie's eyes, he'd sensed her innocence, and discovering that she'd given birth to an illegitimate child hadn't altered that impression. He didn't know how she'd wound up pregnant or why she so vehemently denied Jamie's father's existence, but he would have bet his life on the fact that she hadn't slept around. Realizing that there was little point in pursuing the subject further, Rafe took the sleeping baby from her arms and pushed to his feet. As he stood there gazing down at her, he once again noted how very young and defenseless she looked. Her narrow shoulders barely took up half the pillow behind her, and above the blankets she clutched to her bare chest, he could see the delicate structure of her breast and collarbone. For an instant, his gaze locked on the ugly purple bruises that marred her ivory skin. Whether she wanted to admit it or not, she desperately needed someone to take care of her. En route to the dresser drawer he'd fashioned into a bed for the baby, he found himself entertaining the thought of filling that role himself. And if that wasn't a damn fool notion, he didn't know what was. As he laid Jamie in the cocoon of downy receiving blankets he'd bought, Rafe gave himself a hard mental shake. Like he was in any position to help someone else? Get real. His life was a mess. Even now, his hands trembled in need of a drink. No question about it, she needed help, but not from a hapless drifter whose one goal in life was to buy the next bottle. Come morning, he'd do them both a favor and get the hell out of here. She wouldn't be alone for long, he assured himself. With those eyes and that sweet face of hers, some other man would take one look at her and be putty in her hands. Chapter 5. Sometime around midnight, people rented the cottage next to theirs, and the commotion of slamming doors, raised voices, and thumping luggage startled Maggie awake. Gasping at the pain in her ribs, she shot upright in bed and grabbed the first thing at hand to defend herself, one of the pillows. Rafe glanced up from tending Jamie to see her clutching the sheet to her chest, her terrified gaze fixed on the door, the pillow raised as if she meant to clobber the first thing that moved. Given the fact that in her befuddled state she'd chosen what could only be considered a pitifully ineffectual weapon, he nearly smiled. "You expecting company?" he asked. "Maybe." The moment she spoke, she winced, as if regretting her candor. "I see. And what's the plan, to smother him or bludgeon him to death?" She rubbed at her eyes. "Very funny." As he applied himself to the task of snapping Jamie's sleeper, he said, "There's no need to be jumpy, Maggie. If anyone tries to come in, he'll have to go through me to get to you, and I'm not going to let that happen." "I know," she said softly. The response caught him by surprise, and it meant more to him than he could say. She cast him a shamefaced look and laid the pillow aside. "Reflex reaction. I was dreaming, and the noise startled me." Rafe could see by the taut set of her mouth that the dream still held her in its grip. Still crouched by the dresser drawer he had commandeered to serve as Jamie's bed, he tossed a soiled wipe in the wastebasket, then rested his loosely crossed arms on an upraised knee. "A nightmare, I take it?" She nodded. "Care to talk about it?" Her response to that was a negative shake of her head. Seeing how upset she was, Rafe wished he could comfort her. But how? Even though she seemed to be starting to trust him a little, he'd still never met anyone who so stubbornly resisted accepting help. When left with no choice, she acquiesced, but he had a feeling she wouldn't even then, if not for the sake of her baby. "I have more than my fair share of bad dreams myself," he admitted, "so if you're feeling embarrassed about it, don't." "You have bad dreams?" She fixed him with that lovely brown-eyed gaze, her expression conveying relief that the conversation had shifted from her to him. "What do you dream about?" Rafe's throat went tight. "My family, mostly." She bent her head and tugged at the corner of the pillowcase. "The car wreck?" He'd never talked with anyone about that night, but there was something about Maggie, an indefinable something, that made him consider doing so now. Kindred souls. On the surface, it might appear that her wounds were mostly physical, but one look into her beautiful eyes told him she'd been emotionally battered as well. Shadows lurked there, dark, shifting shadows, and a wariness of him that tugged at his heart. It didn't take a mind reader to determine that she had suffered in her own way nearly as much as he had. She needed a friend, perhaps desperately, and he supposed so did he. But before either of them could reach that point, they had to lower their guards. How could he expect her to trust him enough to reveal her secrets if he didn't have the guts to share some of his own? "Yeah," he said, his voice reminding him of a whetstone rubbing over a knife blade. "I dream about the wreck. It was my fault, and ever since, I've had to live with that knowledge. During the day, I can hold the thoughts at bay, but when I'm sleeping, the memories haunt me." In the amber glow of the bedside lamp, her eyes were luminous, and a golden nimbus shimmered around her tousled dark curls, making her look for all the world like an angel perched there. "Were you drinking when it happened?" she asked tremulously. Rafe gave a humorless huff of laughter. He could see how she might think that. "I didn't start drinking a lot until after the accident. Booze, my panacea." He felt suddenly embarrassed and ran a hand over his face. "No, I wasn't drinking. I almost wish I had been. Then maybe I could live with the decisions I made that night." Blinking to bring the room back into focus, he said, "It happened the first part of October, just a little over 2 years ago." She curled her legs beneath her, leaned more heavily against the headboard, and tugged the sheet higher. The droop of her thick eyelashes was a telltale sign of fatigue, yet he could still detect a certain tension in her posture that told him she wasn't ready to fall asleep just yet. "Is that why you looked so sad last night when you realized it's almost Halloween?" "Yeah," he said gruffly. "Right before he died, my little boy Kiefer got his first pumpkin. Susan helped him carve it. This time of year, it's tough." He batted at the open lid of the disposable diaper box that sat on the rug next to Jamie's bed. When he realized what he was doing, he pressed the flaps closed. "Were you the one driving?" she asked. "No. God, how I wish I had been." He raked his hand over the nap of the rug, watching the limp tufts of yarn stand and then fall. "In my other life, I was a rancher in eastern Oregon." He forced a stiff smile. "Shaved and showered every day. Went to council meetings, five-star restaurants, and church on Sunday. Looking at me now, I guess it's probably hard for you to believe I was respectable once." A ghost of a smile touched her mouth. As it faded, she rubbed her temple as if her head were aching. "Not all that hard." "Was it a cattle ranch you owned?" He nodded. "We raised and trained quarter horses on the side, but cattle were our main stock in trade. That fall, my brother and I had arranged to buy another stud and a brood mare, and we were scheduled to make a trip up north to pick them up. We'd been gone a lot that spring and summer, riding the rodeo circuit, and I hadn't been able to spend much time with Susan and the kids, so I decided to take them with us." "Susan," she echoed softly. "When you say her name, well, I can tell you really loved her a lot." She was an extraordinary person. Smart, witty, fun to be with, and so beautiful she took my breath away. Rafe shrugged. I've never seen a better mother, and, oh God, I loved it when she laughed. She was an incurable optimist, and she always put other people first. She understood me, sometimes better than I understood myself. When she died, I felt as if my heart had been cut out. We fell in love in high school. She was so much a part of me, I didn't know how to go on without her. Rafe fell silent, letting his mind drift back to that fateful autumn night. We had a great time that weekend. Perfect weather, perfect everything. But as we headed home, we ran into a bad storm. Freezing rain that turned to hail the size of marbles. Eastern Oregon must be a bit like Northern Idaho, unpredictable when it comes to the weather. You got that right. We weren't expecting any hail, that's for sure, or we would have laid over until morning. I was in the station wagon with Susan and the kids. My brother and a hired hand were in the truck ahead of us, pulling the horse trailer. The sound of the hail hitting the roof of the trailer frightened the stallion, and I could see him rearing up. I was afraid he might bust a leg. She shifted lower in the bed to rest her cheek on the double stack of pillows. Watching her, Rafe couldn't help but note her pallor. You're exhausted. I should let you get back to sleep. No, please. I want to hear this. She rubbed her eyes again. I doubt I could go back to sleep right now anyway. Listening to you talk is helping me to relax. Rafe couldn't remember what he'd been about to say. Where was I? The stallion was rearing, and you were worried about it getting hurt. Was it a really expensive horse? Yeah, but that wasn't my main concern. Plain and simple, I loved horses. They were a passion of mine back then, always had been. I couldn't bear the thought of the stallion breaking a leg and possibly having to be put down. So I got on the radio and suggested to my brother Ryan that we ride in the trailer to keep the animals calm. Susan was an excellent driver, and she'd been raised in eastern Oregon, so she was used to snow and ice. It never occurred to me that she... He broke off and swallowed. About 2 miles up the road, she lost control in a curve. The car plunged off a 150-foot embankment. She and the kids were killed instantly. He had to force out the next words. I placed more importance on the safety of a horse than I did my own family. I've had to live with that ever since. Oh, Mr. Kendrick, I'm so sorry. Her voice rang with sincerity. That helped somehow. For once, he didn't feel so horribly alone with the pain of remembering. Anyway, that's what I dream about. He said hollowly. I saw it all happen from the back of the trailer. The car suddenly fishtailing, then skidding sideways on the ice. The way it hung there for a moment at the edge of the cliff before it went over. A burning sensation washed over his eyes. I swear to God, to this day, I think Susan turned to look at me, just for a split second, you know? But in my nightmares, that split second lasts an eternity. All I can see is the terror on her face and that pleading look in her eyes. And in every dream, I try to reach them, only I feel as if I'm running through hip-deep molasses, and I never get there in time. How awful for you. And then to relive it over and over in your dreams. Rafe ran his fingertips along the edge of the drawer. When he touched the corner of a new receiving blanket poking up over the side, he fingered the downy softness and closed his eyes. You know the worst part? Over the last few months, even in my dreams, it's gotten so I can no longer see her face clearly, or the kids either. I try my best to remember how each of them looked, and I can't. My memories of them, they're all I have left. And now I'm even losing those. Has it occurred to you that maybe you're finally healing? I know you may not want to believe that. But grief does pass after a time, and we have to get on with the business of living. Once you do that, I think you'll be able to remember their faces again. Not in nightmares anymore. Your memories will be of all the wonderful times you had together. Rafe recalled his recent dream about Susan. In some ways, that had been a good dream. Remembering the fun they'd had down by the lake. Believing, if only briefly, that he was actually back there with them. Deep down, you still blame yourself as much as you did right after the wreck? She asked. He took a moment to consider the question. Truthfully, sometimes traitorous thoughts creep in. Even to admit that made him feel guilty. I'm not even sure where they come from. I get to thinking how I never meant for it to happen, that I loved them more than life itself, and that it's stupid to go on blaming myself when I know damned well that Susan wouldn't want me to. And thinking that way makes you feel terrible, she inserted. He focused on her face. You sound as if you've been through this. She nodded. For a second, Rafe thought she meant to say nothing more, but then she gestured limply with her hand and said, My dad, he was killed in a logging accident. And you blame yourself for that? Not now, but I did for a long time. And when I finally started to turn loose of the guilt, I felt like a worm. The description caught him by surprise, and with a low laugh, he nodded. That describes it perfectly. A worm. Only I feel like a worm that's being fought over by two birds and torn apart. She nodded as well, indicating that she understood exactly what he meant. In time, the torn feeling goes away, and you just feel lower than low, and soon after, even that feeling passes. Losing a parent doesn't compare to what happened to you. I know that. but I think the stages of grief must be pretty much the same for everyone, regardless. It seems that way, anyhow. Watching the expressions that crossed her face, Ray said, "You loved your dad a lot, didn't you?" "We were especially close. I was devastated when he was killed, and in the 10 years since, my life has never been the same. But nothing will bring him back." She regarded the ceiling for a moment. "Now I think of all the good times we had, and I'm thankful to have so many wonderful memories." "How old were you when he died?" 14. "So now you're, what, 24? She showed him a startled look. He winked and smiled. "Gotcha. I'm relentless. I'll keep digging for information until my curiosity is satisfied. Oh, well, it's not as if my age is critical information." Critical information? Just the fact that she'd used that term told Rafe he hadn't misread this situation. Given her determination to reveal so little about herself, he had to accept the fact that she might be evading the police. Normally, Rafe would have disassociated himself from anyone he believed was in trouble with the authorities, but gazing at Maggie's sweet countenance, he couldn't quite fathom her committing a crime. Now, if she was in that kind of trouble, there had to be some kind of mistake or circumstances that had been beyond her control. He fleetingly found himself wondering if she had accidentally killed the man who beat her up. He was tempted to ask. No court in the land would hold her accountable for it if that were the case. Hell, given what the bastard had done to her, they'd probably let her off, even if it had been premeditated murder. Gently, he steered the conversation back to her by saying, "You say your dad died in a logging accident? It seems like a stretch for a young girl to blame herself for that." "Hmm," she responded softly. "I suppose it does. But then it seems like quite a stretch to me that you blame yourself for that car accident. We play nasty head games with ourselves when we're grieving." She passed a hand over her eyes, then let her arm settle limply on the pillow again. "There were extenuating circumstances. My mom had been really sick. Daddy was exhausted from all the extra workload at home, and he wasn't paying close enough attention in the woods. A log rolled and crushed him. I couldn't help but think that it might not have happened if I'd only done more of the chores to lighten his load." She stared off at nothing for a moment. When she looked back at him, her eyes gleamed with curiosity. "So, that's the story of how you came to be bumming the rails?" "Pretty much. After they died, I despised the ranch and everything it represented. One morning when I couldn't bear being there with all the memories any longer, I left my brother a note on the kitchen table and just walked out." "And you never went back?" "Nope. I've never even called home to tell my mom I'm okay." "Bad of me, I know. I tried a few times, but I always hung up before anyone answered. I just couldn't face hearing her voice or listening to her plead with me to come back. I severed all ties the morning I left. I suppose it makes me sound weak, admitting that I ran away and tried to drown my sorrow in a bottle, but that's what I did. I haven't been sober since." "You're sober now," she reminded him. Rafe gazed down at the baby. After a long moment, he slipped a finger under the infant's loosely curled fingers, the pad of his thumb tracing the pointy little knuckles. "Yeah, I'm sober now. Since meeting you and Jamie, I've had a reason to be. You want to hear something strange? I never thought I could bring myself to touch another baby, let alone let myself care about one. But the instant I held him, I started to feel, I don't know, protective, I guess. He sure is a cute little tyke." He looked up and saw that her eyes were sparkling with unshed tears. The corners of her mouth quivered slightly as she said, "Thank you for helping us, Mr. Kendrick. Until now, I didn't realize just how painful this must be for you." She hugged the sheet to her chest with one arm as she swiped at her cheeks. "We'll be on our way in the morning. No more unpleasant reminders." "Unpleasant reminders?" He smiled and shook his head. "I've had a couple of rough moments. I admit that, but overall, tying up with the two of you has been a godsend." "A godsend?" she echoed incredulously. "Hell yes." He stroked his clean-shaven jaw. "For the first time in months, I'm not drunk on my ass. And you know why? Because I couldn't take care of Jamie in that condition. Do you have any idea how long it's been since anyone needed me?" He cupped a hand over the baby's dark head. "If anyone should say thank you, honey, it's me. I just wish..." He broke off and fell silent. Watching him, Maggie guessed what he'd left unsaid, that he wished this time with them didn't have to end. Her heart caught at the look of naked yearning on his face as he gazed down at her son. Even worse, she could understand it. He'd lost his own children, and there'd been a void in his life ever since. Now, in a twinkling, that void had been filled, and deep inside, where reason held no sway, he couldn't help but wish that Jamie were his child, that he need never go back to his lonely existence of riding the rails, his life a one-way ticket to nowhere. Oh, yes, she understood. But as sorry as she felt for him, it scared the sand out of her as well. The last thing she needed right now were complications with another man. All the more reason for her to make fast tracks in the morning, she told herself. The quicker she and Jamie got away from him, the better it would be for all concerned. When morning came, Maggie wasn't much stronger, and Rafe's determination to leave was a whole lot weaker. She was such a curious blend of indomitable spirit and vulnerability that he found her almost irresistible. Yawning awake, he twisted around in the puke-green vinyl chair where he'd spent the remainder of the night, trying to work the kinks out of his spine while he considered the sleeping cherub in the drawer next to his feet. The rumpled collar of his new shirt grazed his chin. It smelled faintly of baby burp. It was a leg up on soured whiskey, at any rate. A man could bond pretty quickly with a baby when he cared for it all night. It was also difficult to keep his emotional distance from a young woman who loved her child so selflessly. Each time Rafe had taken Jamie to Maggie during the night, she'd put him to her breast without complaint. Rafe knew that every tug of the baby's mouth had to hurt like the very devil. But she had endured the pain in stoic silence, the tears gliding down her cheeks, the only indication she gave that she was hurting, and she'd done her best to hide those. Watching the gentleness and love in her expression as she took Jamie into her arms, he'd invariably felt a wave of fierce protectiveness, and crazy thoughts went spiraling through his mind that maybe he should stay here and take care of her for a while. She had dreamed again during the night, talking out in her sleep. Rafe had been able to make little sense of anything she said, but one thing had been absolutely clear. She was terrified of someone named Lonnie. Was he the man who'd beaten her? If so, and the son of a bitch found her, she would need someone to defend her. He'd sure as hell get a nasty surprise if Rafe was still around. Any man who mistreated a woman like that deserved a good ass-kicking. God, he was in over his head and sinking fast. These protective feelings he was developing for Maggie were crazy, just plain crazy. Only he couldn't seem to stop himself. Where was his head? Up his ass? As if he was in any position to take care of her. He'd vowed to love Susan until he no longer had breath left in his body, and he couldn't possibly make room in his heart for someone new. He wouldn't be able to live with himself if he did. As he dialed the local restaurant to order takeout for breakfast, his hands shook so badly that he had trouble punching in the correct numbers. He needed a drink. His yearning from yesterday had become a burning, desperate need. While walking to the restaurant to pick up the food he'd ordered, the winter morning sun, as sharp as a straight razor, lanced his eyes. Rafe tried deep breathing to relieve his need for alcohol. The bracing intakes of cold air only made his chest hurt. He nearly rectified the problem by stopping at the liquor shop. Only thoughts of Jamie forestalled him. He couldn't care for an infant if he was drunk. Instead, he went to the department store again, where he bought Maggie a new blouse and warm parka, and Jamie some sleepers, a few undershirts, and a little snowsuit. It was the least he could do, he assured himself. When he left them, he'd know they would be warm, anyway. When Rafe returned to the motel room, he found Maggie dressed and sitting on the bed, struggling to put on her sneakers. With one glimpse of her pale face, he felt his legs go watery. He quickly closed the door to keep cold air from rushing inside and then deposited all his purchases, including the food, on the small round table near the window. Maggie, honey, what are you doing? Why, he asked, he hadn't a clue. She was obviously preparing to leave. It scared the ever-loving hell out of Rafe to realize there wasn't one damn thing he could do to stop her. In that moment, he wished he did have that authority, that he could tell her to get her little butt back in bed pronto. I have to leave today, she told him in a thready voice. I've got to get where I'm going, find a job, and send for Heidi. Rafe had the feeling Maggie was talking more to herself than to him, as if by saying the words she might force her body to obey the commands from her brain. He couldn't bear to watch her struggle with her shoes. Even though letting her leave was the last thing he wanted, he found himself shedding his coat and hat, then hurrying over to help her. Her brown eyes, shiny bright, she sighed and hugged her ribs, allowing him to work the sneaker onto her narrow foot and tie the laces. Thank you. She eyed the white bag that contained the coffee and breakfast. The warm scents were hard to ignore, but he knew she'd rather starve than ask him for some of the food. Maggie, if you can't even get your shoes on, how can you work? I have to, she said simply. Heidi's counting on me. Heidi, your little sister? Yes. She's staying with a friend until I can send for her. I can't leave her there for very long. She loosened one arm from around herself to brace a hand on the bed. Do you know what time the trains come through here? She would get on another boxcar over his dead body. Rafe bent to put on her other shoe. As he tied the strings, he made a vain attempt to remember all the reasons he shouldn't become any more involved with this girl. But somehow, the vague image of Susan's face did little to set his feelings back on course. Susan no longer needed him. Maggie did. You know, I've been thinking. His voice sounded hoarse and thick, even to him. He raised his gaze to meet hers. What's to say that you and I can't stay together for a while? What do you mean? That was a damn good question. What the hell was he thinking? I don't mean, well, you know, that kind of together, just as friends. Nothing permanent. For a while. Until you're stronger and can manage on your own. Remember I told you I hocked a ring? I've got some of the money left. We can hang out here at the motel for a while, and I can take care of you and Jamie for a week or so, until you're well. Her eyes reflected her incredulity. Why? You've already helped us more than... She shook her head and pushed to her feet, putting him at an eye level with her hips. No, I don't think that'd be a good idea. She sounded almost frightened. He recalled the panic he'd heard in her voice when she learned he'd bought a hot plate. Damn. He didn't want to buy her. He just wanted to help her. Just look at yourself. How can you possibly work? He caught the hem of the T-shirt to prevent her from moving away. Hey, listen to me. We'll work out some kind of arrangement. How's that sound? Some way for you to pay me back, or work off the debt. She flashed him a scathing look. Not like that, he assured her. How then? She sighed and rolled her eyes. I'm fairly accomplished at only three things. Bookkeeping, waiting tables, and cleaning house. As near as I can tell, you aren't exactly up to your eyebrows in daily receipts these days. You don't own a table, and if you did, you have no house to put it in. Rafe nearly set her straight on that, but he bit back the words. What he did or didn't own wasn't the point. I care about what happens to you and that baby. You need a friend, and I'm willing to be that for you. No, she said softly. I appreciate the offer, truly I do, but I already owe you too much. Who's keeping a tally? I'm sure as hell not. She pulled from his grasp. Rafe couldn't be sure, but it looked to him as if she swayed slightly as she stepped away, and she seemed to be breathing a little rapidly. You say that now. Been there. Done that. He stood up. What's that supposed to mean? There aren't any free rides, she said, as she bent with painful slowness to collect her jacket and sweatshirt from the corner where he had tossed them. What are you hoping to get out of it? A temporary ready-made family to replace the one you lost? That stung, possibly because it struck so close to the truth. She sighed and passed a tremulous hand over her eyes. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. It's just that I'm already in so deep, I'll never be able to repay you. By your own admission, you're growing attached to Jamie. The longer you're around him, the more wrenching it will be for you when we leave. Rafe couldn't argue the point. He felt a little frantic when he thought of them going their separate ways. He'd head straight for the liquor store, and within an hour he'd be drunk. Nobody helps someone expecting nothing, she said. Everyone eventually wants a payback of some kind. I learned that the hard way. Judging by her expression, she obviously had learned a bitter lesson from someone. Are we talking about people in general or men more specifically? He knew the answer to that question. It was written all over her face. I've worked in a truck stop for 10 years. Need I say more? She laid out the sweatshirt and jacket on the bed, preparing to wrap Jamie in them before she left. Now probably wasn't the best time to tell her that the makeshift blanket was no longer necessary, but he couldn't see a way around it. You can use the blankets in the drawer, and I bought him a snowsuit. He stepped over to open a sack. I picked up a parka for you as well. I need my coat, and you can't be running around out there in nothing but a T-shirt. She fixed wide, staring eyes on the winter outerwear. The panic in that look was impossible to miss. You shouldn't have. We're not your worry. Rafe knew he shouldn't get angry. It was just so frustrating. Maybe I'm making you my worry. Look, it was very thoughtful to buy us warm things. Truly, and I appreciate the gesture. But I wish you hadn't, and I'd like you to return them. Gazing at her, Rafe thought of his home, a place he hadn't been in quite some time, and all the advantages he could provide for her there. In that moment, he knew he couldn't let her walk out. If he did, he'd spend the rest of his life regretting it and wondering what had happened to her. It was as simple and as complicated as that. It's time, Susan had told him in his dream. He didn't know if she'd actually come to him. Rationally, he knew it was far more likely that the dream had been a product of wishful thinking. But what did it really matter? What did was that he'd actually had a similar conversation with Susan shortly before she died, and she'd extracted a promise from him that he wouldn't spend the rest of his life alone if anything ever happened to her. Bless her heart, she'd done everything in her power that night to set him free, to let him know she wanted him to be happy. Looking back on that night, Rafe had reason to wonder now if Susan had had some kind of premonition. Promise me, Rafe. I want your word that you'll find someone else to love. At the time, he'd thought she was being silly. They'd both been young and in excellent health. He had laughed and tousled her hair, pointing out the possibility that he might marry unwisely on the rebound. Susan had given him a scolding look. You made a good choice the first time around. She'd reminded him, you will again. When you meet the right person, Rafe, you'll know. You'll look into her eyes, something magical will happen, and you'll just know it's right. From the first moment he'd clapped eyes on Maggie, something had stirred back to life within him, and his feelings had been in a hopeless tangle ever since. Was he going to ignore that and keep walking? A man found magic so rarely. When it came along, you either had the courage to throw caution to the wind and grab hold of it, or you forever lost the chance. So what if his feelings for Maggie and Jamie made no sense and didn't conform to a timetable? For the first time in a very long while, he had a reason. She and the baby gave him something to care about, something to fight for, something to grab hold of that was solid. He couldn't just turn loose of that now and say, nice knowing you. God help him, he needed her every bit as much as she needed him. Maggie had worked as a waitress too many years not to recognize possessiveness in a man's eyes, and she saw it in Rafe's. She took a wobbly step in retreat and held up a shaky hand. I really have to go. Name me one reason why. He moved toward her, his long legs taking unhurried strides that seemed to eat up the distance at an alarmingly fast pace. I haven't always bummed the rails. Like I told you last night, I used to be a rancher. If we run out of money, I can call my brother and have him wire me some more. When I walked out, Maggie, it wasn't just the ranch I left behind. I had a substantial amount of money in the bank as well. It's just sitting there now, being put to no good use. Her heart caught just at the suggestion. You haven't called home in 2 years. Now suddenly you're ready to pick up the phone? No. Do it for yourself if you're going to, but not for Jamie and me. That's a decision of the heart, one you need to make because it feels right. Maybe I've just been waiting for a reason. Now I have one. No, she insisted. I won't have you doing that, not for us. It's a moot point. I've still got some cash. If we watch the expenditures, we won't need more money. The rate on this room isn't that steep. I can cover the expenses while you recuperate. He drew to a halt in front of her, his smoky gaze holding hers relentlessly. After that, we'll just play it by ear, see what happens. Maggie backed away another step and shook her aching head. She had only just escaped the autocratic rule of one man. She had no intention of indenturing herself to another. Rafe had been kindness itself so far, and she was grateful. But she wasn't dumb enough to believe the situation would remain status quo if she stayed with him. Sooner or later, he'd begin to feel his helping her gave him certain rights. And in all fairness, she couldn't argue the point. If she accepted what he was offering, she would owe him, and with each passing day, the size of the debt would increase until there would be no way out. I can't. He rubbed a hand over his face and blinked, his expression conveying that he found her refusal to accept his offer not only irrational but unacceptable. Is it your sister? I'll send her the money for a bus ticket right now. He shrugged his shoulders, which were looking broader with every passing second. I like kids. I've proven that with Jamie. How old did you say she is? I didn't. Shivering with a sudden chill, Maggie realized she felt lightheaded and wished for something, anything, to lean against. He studied her for a moment. Is that your answer? For God's sake, surely your sister's age isn't a state secret. Why is it so imperative that you send for her anyway? You said your dad's dead and you mentioned your mom, so I know the kid has someone to take care of her. Is there a mean stepfather lurking in the background or something? He narrowed an eye. Who is Lonnie? Maggie's heart skipped a beat. She stared up at him, wondering how on earth he'd learned her stepfather's first name. You cried out in your sleep. You said the name several times. He held her gaze, making her feel he was reading answers in her eyes that she didn't dare reveal. You're afraid of him, aren't you? He's the one who beat you up, the one you're afraid may come after you. That he had so easily guessed the truth made Maggie feel frantic. She no longer thought Rafe might turn her in for a reward. He'd been too kind and caring for her to believe that, but experience had taught her to trust no man completely. Rafe wanted her and Jamie to stay with him. What if he learned too much and decided to use it as leverage against her? She instantly felt a stab of guilt for entertaining such thoughts about him. He'd been so good to them. Honey, please, he whispered. Take a chance on me. Trust me. Let me take care of you for a while. Oh, how she wished she could. There was nothing she wanted more than to go back to bed, have a sip of coffee, and then sleep. It would be so wonderful to know that Rafe would take care of her and Jamie for a while, that he would be there if she needed him and would send for Heidi. Maggie aborted the fantasy. Taking the easy way out wasn't always best. She'd pay for it, perhaps dearly, and even worse, she'd end up hurting this man in the process. Better to sever the ties right now than to risk breaking his heart. He had suffered enough grief already. Her dizziness increasing, she groped behind her for the wall. It wasn't there. The only solid thing within reach was Rafe. She longed to step close and prop herself against his strong body as she had yesterday. The very fact that she wanted that so badly prodded her to move farther away. I have to use the bathroom, she told him. It wasn't a lie. As she flipped on the light switch and locked the door, the small enclosure went even darker, casting everything in gray-black. Too weird. Even the faint light coming through the tiny window grew dimmer. Maggie blinked and tried to hit the wall switch again, thinking she'd flipped it down instead of up. But her arm suddenly felt as if it weighed a couple hundred pounds and she couldn't raise her hand. She staggered and tried to grab the vanity. The next instant she hit the floor. She lay there, feeling like a tiny translucent flake in a swirling gray-black kaleidoscope. From a long way off she heard Rafe calling her. She couldn't make out the words. Then more loudly he said her name. Maggie. Maggie, answer me. She blinked, trying to see through the dizzying rush of shadows. Then, blackness. Rafe tried the doorknob, knowing before he touched it that Maggie had turned the lock. The loud thud he'd heard echoed in his mind. Oh, God, she'd fainted. He imagined her lying on the other side of the door with her head split open. If she didn't answer him in a second, he'd have to kick down the door. Maggie? Maggie, answer me, damn it! No response. Rafe saw no way around it. He had to reach her. Not allowing himself to consider the possible consequences, he reared back and planted his boot just below the doorknob. Wood splintered, but the lock didn't give. Son of a bitch. Grabbing the knob, Rafe put his shoulder into it, hitting the door with all his weight. Once. Twice. The framing broke and the door crashed open. Maggie lay on the worn linoleum. In the harsh light, her face was so pale she looked dead. His pulse stuttered as he dropped to one knee beside her. Maggie. He cupped her face between his hands. The second he touched her, he realized she was burning up with fever. He lightly tapped her cheeks, but got no response. He gathered her into his arms. Her slight body was completely limp. Over the crook of his arm, her head lolled like a rag doll's. Maggie, talk to me. He strode into the other room and laid her gently on the bed. She reacted to his voice by moaning, but that was as close as she came to regaining consciousness. Rafe grabbed her wrist to check her pulse, then swore and dropped her arm, like he knew what he was doing. Without a watch, he couldn't even check the beats per minute. Launching himself across her inert form, he grabbed the phone, jabbed out 911, and felt as if he would explode with pent-up fear while he waited for someone to answer. I need an ambulance, he barked when a female dispatcher answered. May I have your name, sir? His name? Lady, I've got an emergency here. I need an ambulance. I understand that, sir, but you need to remain calm. Can you tell me the nature of the emergency? Has there been an accident? Bracing his elbows on the mattress to keep his weight off Maggie, Rafe stared down at her lifeless face. No, not an accident. I've got a very sick young woman here. She just collapsed. High fever. I need an ambulance, damn it. Where are you, sir? Rafe couldn't remember the name of the motel. He vaulted off the bed to peer out the window. Forgetting he held the phone receiver, he jerked the bass off the nightstand. The resultant crash and ringing sound were deafening. The Traveler's Rest. The sickening smell of bacon and eggs wafted to his nose from the sacks on the table. Over by the train tracks. I don't know the address. Seconds of silence ticked by. May I have your name now, sir? Rafe exploded. Rafe Kendrick's my name, and you'll wish you'd never heard it if you don't get a damned ambulance over here, lady. Stop asking stupid questions and do your job. I just dispatched the ambulance, Mr. Kendrick. It will be en route momentarily. Please calm down. It's my job to keep you on the phone and assist you until help arrives. Rafe struggled to stifle what could only be an hysterical urge to laugh. All his life he'd been level-headed and calm in emergencies. The only other time he'd ever lost his cool like this had been the night his family was killed. I'm sorry. For yelling, I mean. He threw a frightened glance at Maggie. What should I do? I don't know what to do. She's unconscious and she's burning up with fever. Really sick. She's really sick. Just stay calm. That's why I'm here, Mr. Kendrick, to help you and tell you what to do. First of all, is the woman in the motel room? Yes, I laid her on the bed. Can you reach her and still remain on the phone with me? Yes. He moved back to Maggie. I'm with her now. The dispatcher asked Rafe questions about Maggie's condition, but he listened with only one ear. With the other, he listened for a siren. This was like revisiting a nightmare. Pictures flashed in his head. Susan and his children, the icy hail lashing him as he frantically tried to help them, knowing even as he did that they were beyond help. Oh, please, God, not again. The ambulance will be there in just a minute, the dispatcher promised. Rafe cocked an ear. I can hear the sirens now, I think, he said, thankfulness ringing in his voice. They're coming. Damn, what did they do, give the rig a lube job before they took off? She laughed softly. Trust me, it seems to take a lot longer than it actually does. It's been only 4 minutes since you called. It's been the longest 4 minutes in history. Yes, I know. Is your baby all right, Mr. Kendrick? I can hear it crying. Rafe glanced toward the drawer where Jamie lay snugly enfolded in receiving blankets. He's fine. Just hungry, probably. Good, strong lungs. What's his name? Rafe was about to reply when he remembered how secretive Maggie had been. So much for her attempt to stay away from people. This had blown that plan all to hell. He definitely has a good set of lungs, he agreed, ignoring the question. The sirens came closer. I think the ambulance is pulling in here. I'll stay on the phone. You go flag them down, all right? If they should miss seeing you, simply come back and tell me so I can pinpoint your location for them. Will you do that, please? Of course. And then you'd better take care of your baby. In all the confusion, don't forget you've got him. Forget? In the last 2 days, Rafe had come to feel as if he and Jamie were connected by an umbilical cord. The ER waiting room at Squire Community General looked pretty much like every other ER waiting room Rafe had ever seen. Blue vinyl chairs and sofas lined the off-white walls. The beige floor tiles had the usual smatterings of color, variegated swirls of white and pastels. It made Rafe wonder if there was a worldwide order of interior decorators who specialized in medical facilities. The only notable difference Rafe could see between this waiting room and others was that he was the only person there. Strike that. Jamie counted as one more head. Settling back on the sofa next to his coat, he gazed down at the baby's face resting on the bend of his arm. He'd already removed the snowsuit. Now he peeled away one of the blankets, afraid the child might be too warm. Since racing here in the taxi, they'd been waiting for over an hour, and typical of a hospital, the heat was kept at one temperature, stuffy. But then maybe it only seemed that way to him because he was so tense. How long did it take to examine someone and decide what the hell was wrong anyway? Had they forgotten he was out here? Hell, she had a baby out here, too. Or had they simply written her off as unimportant? Given Maggie's unconsciousness, it had been left to Rafe to answer the admitting receptionist's questions. He'd been able to provide no last name, and when he'd been asked Maggie's address, he'd answered, homeless. He suspected Maggie was from Pryor, but recalling her secretiveness, he'd hesitated to reveal even that much information. As briefly as possible, he'd explained how he'd met Maggie and taken her to a motel when it became apparent she was ill. A few minutes later, he'd overheard the women at the front desk discussing Maggie, and one of them had said, some guy brought her in. I seriously doubt she has insurance. Collections will be so thrilled. As if it mattered if she could pay, one human being was no less important than another. What did one's financial situation have to do with it? He got up and began pacing again. Maggie lay just beyond those double doors. A suffocating sensation squeezed his chest when he remembered how white her face had been. If only he'd insisted she see a doctor. He wasn't even certain there was a qualified doctor on duty in this place. This hospital was a small-town, rinky-dink facility. Had anyone examined Maggie yet? She'd better be receiving first-rate care or heads were going to roll. He'd have their asses in court so fast they wouldn't know what hit them. The thought made Rafe break stride. What did he plan to use for money to hire a lawyer? His irresistible charm? He wasn't back home in Oregon where his last name meant something. This was Podunk, Idaho, and the people here had never even heard of the Kendrick family. He could threaten them all he liked, but he doubted he'd get any results. They'd figure he was just a vagrant with an attitude or a mental condition. Well, that could be rectified, he promised himself, and damned quick. It might be true that he hadn't contacted his parents or brother in 2 years, but they would rally around him if he suddenly decided to call. Rafe could almost see his father bursting into this small hospital, voice booming and blue eyes flashing. Those holier-than-thou secretaries would quake on their castor chairs. Mr. Kendrick? Rafe whirled to see a slender redhead in a white lab coat walking toward him. The stethoscope in her pocket flashed in the fluorescent light. When she drew up, she tucked a clipboard under her arm, her kindly green eyes settling on his face as she extended her hand. I'm Dr. Hamish. I understand you're the gentleman who called the ambulance for our Maggie Doe. Rafe shifted Jamie to free his right arm. As he shook hands with the doctor, he took quick stock of her and liked what he saw, especially the worried frown that pleated her forehead. Seeing that, he felt a little better and a whole lot sheepish for imagining that Maggie might not be getting good care. How is she? Is she going to be all right? The doctor gestured for him to take a seat on the sofa and then followed suit, setting aside the clipboard and then turning so she could search his gaze. Rafe realized she was looking him over as carefully as he had her. Our Maggie Doe has had a rough time of it, she said softly. She's been badly beaten. I assume you're aware of that? Yes. Judging by the doctor's expression, Rafe guessed he ranked high on her list of suspects. I've been taking care of her for 2 days. Bruises like that are pretty hard to overlook. He met her gaze. I didn't do it, if that's what you're thinking. I met her 2 nights ago, and she was already in that condition. The doctor inclined her head, the gesture indicating that she found his explanation credible, but that she still wasn't totally convinced he was innocent of any wrongdoing. She smiled slightly. How did the two of you meet? Rafe bit down hard on his back teeth in an effort to control his temper. After taking 3 deep breaths, he said, Doctor, do you mind? I'm very worried about her, and you still haven't told me how she is. The physician gave a soft, humorless laugh. I'm sorry. I'm rather one-track-minded when it comes to an abused woman. She folded her hands on her lap. Maggie has regained consciousness, and I'm hopeful she'll recover nicely. Thank God. Nevertheless, she's very ill. She's postnatal, which can cause a host of problems if a woman receives no medical care, and I'd venture a guess she hasn't seen a physician since she gave birth. She has a kidney infection that has gone untreated. I believe she has a condition called septicemia. I can't be positive until I get the lab reports, of course, but that's my preliminary diagnosis. Septicemia? That's really dangerous, isn't it? It's serious, yes. Bacteria escape from the focal point of the infection into the bloodstream, multiply rapidly, and spread throughout the body. If left untreated, it can cause septic shock and be life-threatening. Rafe realized he was shaking and cuddled Jamie closer. I've got her on intravenous infusion of heavy-hitting antibiotic and a saline solution. We'll continue that treatment and keep a close eye on her for at least 3 days. After that, I believe she will do well enough on oral medications to be released. if she has anywhere suitable to go, and I can be assured she'll get follow-up exams and complete bed rest for another 7 to 10 days. If not, despite her apparent concerns about the cost, I'll have no alternative but to keep her in the hospital. Rafe closed his eyes for a moment, so relieved he felt almost boneless. But she'll be all right. The doctor sighed. I can't give you an absolute guarantee. Whether or not she'll be all right will depend entirely upon how she responds to treatment. However, I can say that I see no reason at this point to anticipate problems. She studied her folded hands for a moment. When she glanced back up, her gaze was direct and searching. Maggie has been severely beaten, Mr. Kendrick. I believe the blows to her kidneys worsened her condition immeasurably, bruising the already inflamed organs and the surrounding tissue. To be quite honest, I'm not as concerned about her responding to the antibiotics as I am about what may happen to her when she leaves here. In my estimation, she's very fortunate her spleen wasn't ruptured and she sustained no other internal injuries. She won't be beaten again. Rafe nearly snarled the promise. If the bastard comes anywhere near her, I'll... He broke off and swallowed. He won't lay a hand on her. Guaranteed. The doctor searched Rafe's gaze, and then she nodded. I don't generally make snap judgments, but I tend to believe you. You truly aren't the man who did it, are you? I'd like to beat this son of a bitch to within an inch of his life. I've never seen bruises like that on anyone, including myself, and I've gotten pretty busted up a few times in rodeo competition. He thrust a hand through his hair. I can't believe a man deserving of the name would do that to any woman, let alone a slip of a girl who just had a baby. The doctor sighed again, obviously in complete agreement. Then, leaning toward him, she whispered, If you get a chance to beat the hell out of him, don't hog all the fun. If you'll hold him, I'd dearly love to let him have it at least once myself. Of all the things Rafe had expected her to say, that was the last. He gave a startled laugh. Dr. Hamish, you've got yourself a deal. She chuckled. I'll hold you to it. She craned her neck to peek at the baby. This must be the little fellow I've been hearing about. The most wonderful, perfect, precious, and handsome baby in the whole world. Jamie, if I remember right. She told you his name? Rafe raised an eyebrow. What did you do, twist her arm? It took some doing for me to worm that out of her. I cited doctor-patient confidentiality, and then I swore on threat of death not to repeat anything she told me. At that, it was slim pickings as far as information went. She's quite sick, of course, and doesn't feel like talking, which may account for some of her reticence. But it's still a bit odd that she refused to give us her last name or say where she's from. I think she's running, Rafe told her. The doctor nodded. And judging by those bruises, who can blame her? You never said how the two of you met. What's the scoop on that doctor-patient confidentiality? He asked. I won't break Maggie's confidence or yours, she assured him. My first responsibility is to my patient. Rafe told her the story of how he met Maggie. I tried to get her to see a doctor, but she refused. To be honest, he searched the physician's gaze again. I want your word you won't repeat any of this, Doc. She nodded. You have my word. I believe that young woman needs protection, and I won't jeopardize her safety. Rafe wasn't certain why, but he believed her. He just hoped he wasn't making a mistake. I think maybe Maggie's afraid the cops are looking for her. The doctor lifted an eyebrow. The cops? Why, I wonder. Your guess is as good as mine. She doesn't strike me as the criminal type. No, the doctor agreed thoughtfully. Do you think she may be fleeing from an abusive husband? She glanced pointedly at Jamie. Perhaps she's embroiled in a nasty divorce and child custody suit, and she's made off with the baby. I don't think so. She wears no ring, and there's no sign she did recently. Not every woman wears a ring these days, of course, but she said other things that lead me to believe she's unmarried. He quickly recounted Maggie's insistence that Jamie had no father. That doesn't sound like something a married or recently divorced woman might say. No, it doesn't. The doctor sighed and settled her gaze on Jamie again. It would seem that you've bitten off a large chunk of responsibility, Mr. Kendrick. I imagine you'll be relieved to get that little fellow off your hands. Rafe's heart caught. Off my hands? Well, yes, she said, smiling kindly. Maggie and her baby aren't your responsibility, after all. Until she can care for him herself again, Jamie should be placed with the county. The temporary care is quite good, I assure you. No. The refusal was out of Rafe's mouth before he could even contemplate his reasons. He couldn't hand Jamie over to strangers. As I already pointed out, Maggie and her baby aren't your responsibility. Responsibility can be assumed. Well, yes, I suppose it can. Well, then, I'm assuming it. The doctor tapped her chin, regarding Rafe with concern. I know you mean well, Mr. Kendrick, and please don't be offended. But are you certain you're in a position to assume that responsibility? It isn't only Jamie you must consider, but Maggie. She'll need care when she leaves here, and I'm not... I'll see that they're both taken care of. How? When Maggie is released, she'll be unable to look after the baby. She'll need constant care herself for at least 7 days, and she can't receive the quality care she needs in an econo-rate motel room. How can you care for her if you have to get a job to foot the bills, which may be substantial? She's going to need one or two rounds of very expensive medication for starters. And nourishing, well-balanced meals, not fast food or the greasy fare available in our local restaurants. She shook her head. By your own admission, you're presently unemployed, low on funds, and have no home where you might take her. She held out her arms. Jamie will be better off in temporary foster care. Please, let me... Rafe cut her short by pushing to his feet. A feeling of impending doom filled him as he gazed down at the infant in his arms and thought about handing him over. He met the doctor's worried gaze. Looks can be deceiving, Doc. He informed her gruffly, I own a home where I can take Maggie to convalesce. The place is damn near as big as this backwoods hospital, and there's a full-time housekeeper to do the cooking. As for money, I guarantee I have a hell of a lot more in the bank than you do. The doctor's expression conveyed more clearly than words that she sympathized with his feelings, but that she didn't believe a word he had said. Rafe glanced up the hall at a bank of payphones. By the time Maggie is released, I'll have the Kendrick family Sesta flown in from Oregon and waiting here to pick her up. He returned his gaze to hers, assuming, of course, that this one-horse Idaho town even has an airport where it can land. Her expression reflecting startled amazement, she nodded. Yes, we have a small municipal airport here. She raked him with an incredulous look. If you're about to tell me you're an eccentric millionaire, I'm not inclined to believe you without some kind of proof, and I won't allow you to remove Maggie from this hospital until I get it. Multi, and I'm not eccentric. As for proof, what do you have in mind? Will verification from my bank convince you? Well, yes, I suppose that would suffice. He plucked her clipboard from the sofa and jotted the name and branch of his bank in the upper right-hand corner of Maggie's chart. Below it, he underlined his social security number. Go ahead and call. I can't remember the account number, but they'll know the name. Tell them I'm about to write you a check for whatever amount you like and that you want to verify funds before you accept it. They won't tell you my exact balance, but they will tell you if I can cover the draft. He handed her the clipboard. Then he headed for the payphones. They were looking back to see the stunned expression that crossed her face. Chapter 6. Rafe stood in the hospital hall and stared at the phone for several long seconds before he lifted the receiver. Tucking it under his chin to use his free hand, he dialed the operator and placed a collect call to Oregon. While the phone rang, he fixed his gaze on Jamie's small face. Finally, he heard his brother Ryan's voice. In a voice gone stony and suspicious, he said, Yeah, sure, I'll accept the charges. Go ahead, sir, the operator told Rafe. Rye? Rafe heard the quaver in his voice. He closed his eyes and swallowed, scarcely able to believe he was doing this. It's me, Rafe. My God, it really is you. I figured it was another crank call. Crank call? Long story. Rafe, where the hell are you? Are you all right? His voice sounded the same, but a little older, a little rough-edged. I'm fine. As Rafe said the words, he knew they were true. Since meeting up with Maggie, he actually was all right again. I don't know exactly what to say. Hello, I guess. Hello? Ryan swore, and the line crackled. You rotten son of a bitch, we thought you were dead. Where the hell have you been? Rafe was about to answer when he heard his brother sob, one of those dry, straight-from-the-gut sobs that come only from strong men who never break down. Rye? Hey, bro, don't. Don't? How could you do this? You've got a family who loves you, damn it. Have you any idea the heartache you've caused our mother? Rafe leaned a shoulder against the metal phone partition. When he spoke, his voice grated. I'm sorry, Ryan. I just couldn't call. I tried several times. I'm sorry. You're sorry? She couldn't eat, couldn't sleep. She lost over 30 pounds, for God's sake. Where are you? When I get there, the first thing I'm going to do is hug you. Then I'm going to stomp the holy hell out of you. Rafe smiled slightly, his eyes blurry with tears. Right now, you could probably do it with one hand tied behind your back. Oh, Christ, are you sick? Rafe made a fist around the metal-sheathed phone cord. I'm okay now. It's, sort of a long story. Like I can't afford the phone bill? Rafe chuckled, if a little wetly. Damn, it's so good to hear your voice. I've missed you, Ryan. Slowly, he filled his brother in on what he'd been doing since that fateful morning when he'd left a note on the kitchen table and walked out. I can't believe I'm hearing this. You've been bumming the rails? Yes. I haven't heard of anyone doing that in years. Rafe smiled slightly. We have more homeless people in this country now than ever before. Do you think they all live in large cities? Of course not. I just... Ryan made an exasperated sound. My brother, a tramp? What do you mean you have a drinking problem? Just that I do. I sobered up 2 days ago. I didn't have much choice. I tied up with a lady who needed my help more than I needed another bottle. A lady? Where the hell does a bum meet a lady? In a boxcar? Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was in a boxcar. I don't want to hear this. A boxcar? I've heard of men picking up women in bars. I thought that was bad. But a boxcar? Have you lost your mind? She's beautiful, Rye. I know it sounds nuts, especially in just 2 days, but I think I'm falling in love with her. She's one of those people you just can't help but care about, you know? Oh, shit. Long silence. Rafe, where are you? At a hospital in Podunk, Idaho. You said you weren't sick. I'm not sick. It's Maggie. I know it's a lot to ask, but can you fly over and pick us up, Rye? I need you to be here in 3 days. What is today, anyway? It's Thursday the 28th. And what do you mean, pick us up? You're bringing her home with you? Rafe, are you even thinking straight? Straight as an arrow. Rafe assured him, meeting her saved my life, Ryan. I promise you'll love her. And hey, just wait until you see Jamie. Jamie? Her baby boy. He's cute as a speckled pup. She has a baby. Rafe, where exactly are you? Squire, just across the Idaho border. I've never heard of it. Well, it's not exactly a metropolis. It's up north. Colder than a well digger's ass up here, too. Your lungs damn near freeze when you breathe. I'll be there tomorrow morning, Ryan promised. I'd be there tonight, but it's been a while since I've taken the Cessna up. It'll need a pre-flight, and I've got to map a flight plan. Rafe, don't do anything dumb before I get there. Like what? Like, well, hell, I don't know. Marry her or something stupid like that, I guess. Let's you and me have a long talk first. All right, brother? Actually, I hadn't thought far enough ahead yet to consider marriage. Not a bad idea, though. If ever a woman needed a husband, it's Maggie. You're kidding, right? Rafe was, and yet he wasn't. We'll have to see what happens, I guess. She's a little skittish about tying up with me. Well, at least one of you is thinking straight. I may be able to get there sometime late tonight. Sounds to me like you need a caretaker. Rafe threw back his head and barked with laughter. The rumble wakened Jamie, and he let out a thin cry. Damn, there really is a baby. Yeah, Rafe said, jiggling the infant to lull him back to sleep. And there's no need to break a leg getting here, Rye. There's nothing you can say or do to change this. I already swallowed the hook. Ryan sighed. You're a grown man. I guess you know what you're doing. All I care about is that you come home to do it. Home. The word moved softly through Rafe's mind, rekindling memories that he had been trying to escape. No, he no longer felt the need. He was going back, and unless Maggie came up with a damned good argument against it, he was taking her with him. There was a great college there and plenty of employment opportunities. It'd be the perfect place for her to start over, with the added benefit that he'd be nearby to look after her. Fleetingly, Rafe thought of Susan. One corner of his heart would always belong to her and his children, but he was finished with punishing himself for something he'd never meant to happen and couldn't change. Will you call Mom and Dad for me? Rafe asked gruffly. I don't want it to be a shock when they see me. They're in Florida, but I'll call them. They'll want to fly back to see you. Dad's been having chest pains, though. I think he has an appointment scheduled with a heart specialist, so it may be a few weeks. Mom probably won't let him fly until the doc says it's all right. That'll give them both some time to talk to you on the phone and absorb the news before they actually see you. Rafe pictured his tall, robust father. A heart doctor? Is he all right? Nothing out of the ordinary for a man who's 60. Frequent angina attacks, Mom says. You know how that goes, though. The RN in her can't resist diagnosing stuff, and a fourth of the time she's wrong. Rafe frowned. It seems odd that he'd get heart trouble all of a sudden. I think it's the food, Ryan said. They've been into Creole lately, and you know how he is about grease. Put the two together and you've got chronic indigestion. He's still sneaking smokes behind her back, too. Ornery old cuss. The thought of losing his dad before he had a chance to see him again made Rafe's blood run cold. I'm glad Mom's on top of it. He'd say screw the chest pain and climb on a plane. Ryan chuckled. Damn, it's good talking to you again. It's good talking to you, too. It felt so good, Rafe wondered why he'd waited so long. We're getting Christmas early this year. We've combed the whole country looking for you, offered rewards. We'd damned near given you up for dead. So had I, Rafe admitted softly. For a long time I wanted to die and spent a lot of time wishing I would. He took a cleansing breath and smiled. Sounds pretty stupid saying it aloud, but I was pretty messed up, Rye. You had a right. Another silence came over the line. I wish you had stayed here and gotten counseling like I suggested. They have all kinds of help for people to get through the grieving process. The grieving process. Rafe could remember Ryan's using that phrase before and how it had infuriated him. Now he knew that there was a grieving process. It was called hell, only you didn't have to die to go there. I found my own cure. Do you know how lucky you are to still be alive, you blockhead? Rafe chuckled. Damned lucky, he said, and sincerely meant it. How are you fixed for money? I have some business to settle up here in town. That'll set me back a little over 700, so I'll need some cash. Bring me a little extra, hey, bro? Speaking of which, is my checking account still active? I have a woman calling the bank to verify funds. Of course it's still active. Long silence. Couldn't quite bring myself to close it out. It felt so final. Rationally, I figured there wasn't much hope that you'd ever come back, but a part of me just couldn't... Ryan cursed under his breath. Yeah, it's still active. He sighed.
Yeah.
What makes you think I haven't managed to go bust trying to run this place by myself? Rafe laughed, because you're a Kendrick. You teethed on saddle leather and cowhide. I'm probably worth more now than I was when I left. Yes, and you owe me a 2-year vacation. Give me a month to get buffed out, and it's yours to take if you want to. Now that I've made the decision, I'm anxious to smell cow manure again. That's good. I may rub your nose in it. Rafe was still chuckling when he hung up the phone. The smile was short-lived. As he turned toward the waiting area, he saw Dr. Hamish walking down the hall, and her expression conveyed that something was wrong. Rafe's heart bounced in his chest like a tennis ball, and he picked up his pace to reach her. Is Maggie all right? She nodded, but her pallor told him otherwise.
I'm fine.
We have
I'm
a wrinkle.
No,
she lifted her hands, flashing him a stricken look.
Okay, don't worry about
One of our aides found Maggie's driver's license in the pocket of her jeans. Because she'd been brought in unconscious, he took the license to the admittance desk. Technically, he was following procedure. He had no idea Maggie didn't want her family contacted.
Damn.
The doctor gave him a commiserating look. I never meant for this to happen, but one of the receptionists called the police, and they contacted her family. The officer spoke with her stepfather, a man named Lonnie Boyle. Rafe groaned and passed a hand over his eyes. Fantastic. Do you think this Boyle is the man who beat her up? Rafe considered the question. I think it's a damned good possibility. I feel terrible about this. The policeman said Mr. Boyle sounded very concerned and plans to drive straight here. If he's the man who hurt her, well, normally I'd apprise the police of my suspicions. Her name didn't seem to set off any red lights with them, but I imagine a lot of names go across an officer's desk in a day's time. But if she is in some kind of trouble, I'm afraid to call back about Boyle for fear I'll only complicate matters. The doctor had a point. Until he could pry more information out of Maggie, Rafe was reluctant to involve the police any further as well. If her stepfather is the one who beat her up, there's nothing he can do to her here. That's true. Let's play it by ear. If he causes trouble and things get out of hand, we'll have no choice but to call the police. Until then, though, I'd rather hold off. The doctor gnawed her lower lip. She glanced at the baby in Rafe's arms. Mr. Boyle may insist that Jamie be turned over into his care. Rafe stared down the hall for a long moment. That'll be up to Maggie. If she trusts the man, then I will. If she doesn't... He broke off and shook his head. He'll play hell laying a finger on this child, I can tell you that. Dr. Hamish gave him a thoughtful look and smiled. I called your bank, by the way. And the teller said the check was well covered. She arched an eyebrow. I told her we were negotiating a real estate transaction and that the check was for $350,000. Satisfied? She nodded bemusedly. I know it's a bold question, but how much money do you have exactly? Enough. As long as you're assured I have the means to take care of Maggie and Jamie, the amount doesn't really matter, does it? No, she admitted. Do you think Maggie knows how lucky she is that you're in her corner? Rafe gave the doctor a wink and slow grin. Not yet. Have you told her you're a man of considerable means? His grin broadened, not in so many words. She narrowed an eye. This should be interesting. At that, Rafe chuckled, waking Jamie a second time. The baby refused to go back to sleep until he was fed and changed. The doctor left Rafe to handle it when she got a whiff of the odor emanating from Jamie's sleeper. You did say you were assuming responsibility, she reminded him. Angling his head off to one side, Rafe did his best to keep his mouth closed as he replied, I did say that, didn't I? Rafe Kendrick was a man of his word. Messy diapers notwithstanding. Maggie had been moved to a private room. She lay staring at the ceiling, the muted ticking of the wall clock marking off the seconds. Considering the daily rates for a hospital stay, she wondered how much this was costing her per minute. The IV shunt in the back of her right hand made her feel as if she were on a leash. If not for that, she would have asked the doctor to write her a prescription, located her clothes, and walked out of here. She couldn't believe she'd fainted. She might have laughed if it hadn't been so awful. Why now, of all times? She needed to be on her way. She had to send for Heidi, and she needed to get settled to take care of Jamie. Now, to top everything off, she'd have hospital bills up to her eyebrows. No matter, she assured herself. She'd manage somehow. The doctor said she was really sick, so she didn't have much of a choice about staying here until she got back on her feet. Once she was released, she'd have to work two jobs for a while. That was all. She'd done it before. She could do it again. Child care might prove to be a problem, but she'd find someone trustworthy to watch after Jamie. Everything would work out. She had to believe that. Maybe if she really concentrated, she could conjure up a fairy godmother who'd wave her wand and make all her troubles go away. She closed her eyes, so sick and exhausted that contemplation of anything beyond the moment was too taxing. So, instead, she surrendered her mind to the whimsical. If there really were such a thing as magic and fairy godmothers, what would she wish for? Nothing so silly as a pumpkin coach and a glass slipper, that was for sure. No, if she were going to wish for anything, she'd set her sights on more practical things, like a really good job and a chance to get a better education. She didn't need anyone to take care of her. She could do a fine job of that by herself. More earning power would definitely be nice, though. Rafe tapped the toe of his boot on the lobby carpet, his gaze flickering to the information desk where an elderly female volunteer commandeered the telephone and gave visitors directions. Shrunken with age, she put him in mind of a cheerful elf with her silvery white hair and jolly pink uniform. She had promised to let him know the moment Maggie was settled in her room. It seemed as if he'd been waiting an eternity. A man stepped up to the counter and muttered a question to the woman. After giving the fellow a quick once-over, Rafe lost interest. Guys just like him were a dime a dozen in the western states. Classic small-town redneck, the kind who swilled cheap beer, believed pro-wrestling was on the up-and-up, and considered himself well-read because he stumbled through a Pulp Fiction paperback once a year. Scraggly, sandy-colored hair hung in oily strands to his shoulders. He wore faded jeans and a dingy white T-shirt, one sleeve rolled up over a half-smoked pack of Camel Straights. When the man suddenly turned and looked directly at Rafe, all his senses went on alert. Lonnie Boyle? Why he felt surprised, he didn't know. He hadn't been expecting an upstanding citizen, after all. As Boyle strode toward him, Rafe took more careful inventory, noting the gold hoop he wore in his right ear. His stringy biceps sported tattoos, the one on his right arm of a naked woman with a fanged serpent coiled around her. Instinctively, Rafe held Jamie a little closer. Preceded by a beer belly that protruded over the waistband of his low-slung Levi's, Boyle swaggered cockily. As he drew up in front of the sofa, Rafe saw that he clutched some folded papers in his left hand. The man puffed out his chest, his shifty gray eyes taking Rafe's measure and then settling on Jamie. He had bully written all over him. "You Kendrick?" Rafe nodded. "Name's Boyle, Lonnie Boyle. I'm Maggie's father." He extended his right hand, a large diamond ring flashing on his finger. Rafe stared at that ring for a long moment, took measure of the jutting prongs that secured the stones, and immediately wanted to kill the son of a bitch. Since they were inside the hospital, he settled for declining his handshake. Boyle lowered his arm, rubbing his palm on his jeans. Rafe's gaze followed that ring. "I'm Jamie's grandpa." He gestured at the baby. "The doc says you've been taking care of him." "I sure appreciate that. Now I'm here, though, you're off the hook. What do I owe you for your trouble?" All Rafe wanted was to catch him outside. "You owe me nothing. As for Jamie, I'll continue to care for him until Maggie tells me differently." Boyle thrust out the papers. "Well, Mr. Kendrick, you best be reading these then before you get yourself neck deep in hot water. These here are adoption papers. A private arrangement. The folks who adopted the baby paid Maggie a pretty penny to cover her medical expenses, plus a handsome sum to put her through college. Maggie took the money, but then she got all motherly and ran off with the baby. Too late for that. She's got no rights now, and I've come to take the kid back to his new mama and daddy. Nobody is taking Jamie anywhere until Maggie gives her authorization." Boyle's face flushed. "Look, Buster, you're interfering where you got no business. That kid ain't hers no more, and she's got no say-so." He tossed the papers on the sofa. "Read 'em. She signed the goddamn things of her own free will, and I'm taking that baby, whether you like it or not." Rafe unfolded the document and quickly scanned it. The signature that was supposedly Maggie's looked as if it had been written by an unsteady hand. There were also some dirt smudges and faint reddish-brown smears on the papers. The notary seal looked genuine. He ran his thumb over the raised dots. "Were these papers even signed in an office? They're dirty, and these stains look like blood." Boyle never missed a beat. "They are blood. Maggie poked her finger with one of the staple prongs. As for the dirt..." He glanced down at his hands. "I got me a flat tire driving down here. My hands was a mess. I just washed up in the men's room a few minutes ago." A poked finger and dirty hands, huh? The story was credible enough. Only something told Rafe that Boyle's delivery was a little too well practiced. As he returned the papers to the man, he said, "No one's touching this child until Maggie gives me the go-ahead. Clear? If you mean to take this baby anywhere, she has to authorize it." Boyle's face turned an even darker shade of red. He snatched the document from Rafe's hand and slapped it against his thigh. "I'll get her authorization in damn short order, then. To hell with this bullshit." With that, he turned and struck off across the lobby, heading for the east wing. Rafe tried to resist his urge to follow the man. He had no business interfering between Maggie and her stepfather. She was in a room near the nurse's station. She was bound to have an emergency buzzer to press if she needed help. There was no reason for him to get in the middle of this. The smell jerked Maggie awake. Cigarettes and beer. Thinking it was only a bad dream, she opened her eyes. A face swam in her bleary vision. Lonnie? Her heart gave a violent leap. Who else? Nobody skips out on me and gets away with it. You had to know I'd find you. Struggling not to panic, Maggie groped for her buzzer. When her fingertips didn't connect with the plastic casing, she cast a wild glance at the bed rail, searching for the thick gray cord. Oops. Lonnie braced his hands on the metal bars, effecting a trap with his arms, and leaned closer so their noses nearly touched. Looks like it fell off the bed. Ain't that a shame? Though I gotta say, it works out real nice for me. This way we can get this settled without nobody barging in and poking their nose where it don't belong. A cold resolve settled in the pit of Maggie's stomach. He'd closed the door. If she screamed for help, she had no idea if anyone would hear her, and she'd only get one chance before he covered her mouth. She forced herself to meet his gaze, trying not to show any fear. There's nothing to settle. You forced me to sign those papers. I've got bruises all over me to prove it. Big mistake. You didn't keep me home this time until the evidence faded. Give back the money, Lonnie, and cut your losses. I'm not going to give up my child. He laughed, the sound oily and horrible. Them bruises don't got my name on 'em. You can't prove nothing. Far as anybody else knows, you got yourself a nasty-tempered boyfriend. He traced a fingertip along her cheekbone. Maggie tried to jerk her face away, but pain and weakness made her movements sluggish. Here's how it stands, sweetness. I got signed, notarized paper saying you gave up your kid for adoption and that you took the money. All legal and tidy. If you try to fight me, there ain't a judge anywhere that'll rule in your favor, especially not when your own stepdaddy speaks out against you, testifying that you ain't a fit mother. Unfit? Using the hand unhampered by the IV, she shoved his arm away. Get out of here. You've got no hold over me now. Heidi's safe. I've seen to that, and she's prepared to tell a judge what a creep you are so she can live with me. You'll never get within a mile of her again. I'm warning you, Lonnie. Back me into a corner on this, and even though it may upset Mama, I'll come out fighting. You'll be the one who lives to regret it. Do you understand? I'll file charges against you for assault. The doctor here will back me up. She's seen what you did to me. They'll toss you in a cell and throw away the key. His grin only broadened. So Heidi's safe, is she? You sure about that, little girl? Maggie's heart caught. She'd seen that gleam in Lonnie's eyes before. I figured out where you took her, he whispered. He was lying. He had to be lying, Maggie thought frantically. Her boss's sister had offered to let Heidi stay with her until Maggie could send for her. The woman had a different married name than Terry and lived in another town. There was no way Lonnie could have tracked Heidi down. You're lying. Am I? Well, now, sweetness, you best be damn sure. As he spoke, he curled his fingers over her hand and started bending her wrist back. You see, it went like this. Heidi, she got to worrying about your mama fretting over her, so she telephoned home to tell her she was all right. He laughed. I always knew that caller ID would come in handy someday. Heidi being only 10, I guess she didn't stop to think about me tracing the call. I wrote down the name and phone number, went to the sheriff's office, and me and a county deputy drove over to Tillard to fetch her back. He smiled evilly. If you don't come home, fine by me. Me and Heidi will get along right fine. A wave of dizziness made Maggie blink. Pain lanced up from her twisted wrist. Through clenched teeth, she whispered, You monster. Lonnie wrenched harder on her hand. Say now, let's not call names. Start getting mouthy and disrespectful, and I'm liable to get mad. What happens to Heidi then? He pressed his face so close that the rancid smell of his breath nearly gagged her. He arched his brows in question. Hey, sweetness, what's wrong with your screamer? It broke or something? All of a sudden, like you're being a model of good behavior. Through the closed door of Maggie's room, Rafe could hear the growl of Boyle's voice, interspersed with Maggie's faint responses. Settling Jamie in the bend of his right arm, Rafe inched the door open. Through the crack, he could see Maggie on the raised hospital bed. Boyle leaned over her, twisting on her wrist and laughing softly. Rafe's gaze shot to the side of her bed, where the emergency buzzer dangled at the end of its cord. You're going to tell that asshole to let me have that kid or you'll be sorry. You understand me? Maggie arched her spine and tried to grab his wrist with both hands, but her IV tube snagged on the bed rail. Hopeless to intervene with a baby in his arms, Rafe turned to catch a nurse who was hurrying down the hallway. Ignoring her startled expression, he thrust the infant into her arms. Take this child to the nurse's station and see to it he's kept safe. No one but me is to take him, you understand? Wide-eyed, the young nurse nodded mutely. Then get on the horn to page Dr. Hamish in security. There's a disorderly visitor in 122. He's roughing up a patient. There's going to be trouble, and I may need help. As the nurse scurried back toward the nurse's station with Jamie, Rafe turned to face the door, trying with everything he had to get his temper under control. It was a no-go. He'd never been so mad. When he pushed the door back open, he grew even more furious. Face averted from her stepfather, Maggie struggled while Boyle continued to bend her wrist to the breaking point. The tendons at each side of her throat were distended as she strained to free her twisted arm. Rafe didn't feel his feet move. Between one breath and the next, he was across the room. Not bothering to speak, he swung at Boyle with all his strength, knocking him off Maggie and backward. Maggie screamed as Boyle spun with the force of the blow. After doing a full turn, the heartless bastard grabbed for the privacy drape to break his fall. He pulled the drape down with him, sending the curtain hooks flying in all directions and landed flat on his ass. Rafe was on him again before he could move, grabbing him by the front of his shirt. At the edge of his mind, he knew this wasn't the time or place for it, but he couldn't resist planting his fist squarely on the bastard's nose, just once. Boyle howled and clamped a hand over his face. You broke my nose! That's not all I want to break, you worm! Seizing the man's bent arm, Rafe twisted it behind his back, flipped him over onto his belly, and straddled his hips. For good measure, he smacked the back of Boyle's head with the heel of his hand to make damn sure he did a faceplant on the tile. You ever lay so much as a finger on her again, and I'll kill you. You read me loud and clear, you rotten son of a bitch! Boyle grunted and gasped out, My arm! God damn! Let up before you break my wrist! How does it feel to get some of your own medicine? Rafe twisted harder. Oh, Jesus, God, Boyle cried. Maggie, make him let me go. Maggie, Rafe, please, let him up. This will only make it worse. Amazement coursed through Rafe. He'd seen the look on her face. She hated and feared this man, and there wasn't a doubt in Rafe's mind that it had been Boyle who'd beaten the hell out of her. Yet she was pleading with Rafe to release him. Not a chance. Rafe, please, she begged. Oh, God, you don't understand. You've no idea what he'll do. Please, oh, please. Rafe reluctantly eased the pressure. Are you all right? Sitting up in bed, she was shaking violently, one arm curled around her ribs. Her brown eyes swimming with unshed tears, she glanced fearfully around the room. Jamie, oh, God, my baby, what did you do with him? The nurses have him, and they've been warned to turn him over only to me. Rafe hastened to assure her. He's fine, Maggie. Her shoulders slumped with relief. Dr. Hamish and security are on the way here, Rafe told her. Then leaning forward, he met Boyle's gaze and added, You're going to jail. You may get away with this where you come from, but you can't walk into a hospital and manhandle a woman. I hope they toss you in a cell and throw away the key. What's going on in here? Rafe reared back to see around the bed. He recognized the flash of Dr. Hamish's red hair as she ran to Maggie's side. Over the top of the mattress, Rafe saw her quickly check the IV shunt in the back of her patient's hand. Then she pressed Maggie against the pillows and sent Rafe an inquiring look. He nodded at the man beneath him. Meet Mr. Boyle. I caught him trying to strong-arm your patient. It seems he forced her to sign adoption papers. I think we both know what kind of coercion he used. Now he's demanding she relinquish custody of the baby. He claims the adoptive parents paid her handsomely to give Jamie up, all her medical bills and money to go to college. I never got a cent, Maggie insisted. I wouldn't sell my baby. It's a lie, a horrible lie. Lonnie took the money, all of it. He arranged everything behind my back and then forced me to sign the papers. The doctor slipped an arm around Maggie's shoulders and drew her close. Shh, Maggie, calm down, she soothed. He won't take your baby. In most cases, even if a woman does sign the papers, a judge will rule in favor of the natural mother if she changes her mind. Wanna bet, Boyle cried. How about if the natural mother's unfit? I'll testify against her, see if I don't. How will that look, huh? Her own stepfather speaking out against her. After I get done talking, the judge will think twice about ruling in her favor. Mark my words. Don't believe in Maggie, Dr. Hamish interjected. Doesn't make no difference what she believes, Boyle retorted. Only what a judge thinks will matter. He'll want that kid to have a good home, and the folks adopting him are rich. Big, fancy house. Uppity-up neighborhood. They'll send him to the best schools. No contest. They'll already have that baby, and no judge in his right mind will make them give a child back to a two-bit little tramp who sold him to support her drug habit. Maggie made a tortured sound. Drug habit? I don't take drugs. Boyle sneered. Oh, yeah? Prove it. I'll swear you did, and so will the attorney. We'll say you only stopped using long enough to get your kid back. The physician's green eyes darted to Rafe. The security guards rushed into the room just then. After taking quick stock of the situation, one of the uniformed men turned to the doctor. Should we call the police? Yes, call the goddamned police, Boyle yelled, straining against Rafe's hold. She signed them papers of her own free will and took money, sold her own baby, some mother. The adoption attorney notarized the papers himself. They're on the bed. Look and see for yourself. She's got no claim to that kid anymore, and I'm taking him to his new parents. None of you can stop me. I got the law on my side. It'll take months before the case goes to court. By then, the kid'll love his adopted parents, and she'll play hell getting him back. Rafe didn't doubt for an instant that money had changed hands. He was also convinced it had gone straight into Boyle's. Maggie had gotten nothing out of the deal but a beating that had damn near killed her. Evidently, after being forced to sign the papers, she had somehow managed to flee with the baby before her stepfather could turn him over to the adoptive parents. Any attorney who had been present to authenticate those adoption papers when Maggie was being physically forced to sign them had to be as slimy a worm as Boyle was. A crooked adoption attorney who dealt in human flesh, a son of a bitch for a stepfather. Dear God. Searching Maggie's terrified gaze, Rafe knew she was in way over her head. Boyle was right. It would look bad for Maggie if her own stepfather testified against her at a hearing, and in the ensuing months until the case was reviewed by a judge, Jamie would become attached to his adoptive parents. The court would definitely take into account that Maggie was a virtual stranger to him. Unless she could prove she'd been muscled into signing those papers, she could lose her baby. And as Boyle had already pointed out, none of those bruises on her body had his name on them. It would nearly kill Maggie if she lost her child. Seeing no alternative, Rafe released Boyle's arm and swung off him, signaling the guards to take over. Boyle rolled onto his side, rubbing his wrist. He sneered as the two security guards pulled him to his feet, then shook their hands away as he gained his balance. He swiped furiously at the blood under his nose, grabbed the adoption papers off the bed, and staggered to the door. Before storming into the room, he turned and leveled a finger at Maggie. You made a bad mistake when you decided to mess with me, little lady. That baby ain't all you're going to lose. What about your sweet mama and that cute little sister of yours? I'll wait in the lobby and give you an hour to think about it. If you don't change your mind and hand over the kid in that time, I'm calling the cops. He waved the papers and shot Rafe a smoldering look. You won't be such a hot shot then, hey boy? Refuse to give them that kid and see what happens. They'll throw your ass in jail so fast it'll make you busy. Chapter 7. After Boyle made his exit, the hospital room went deathly quiet. Rafe wasn't sure how he expected Maggie to react. He only knew any reaction would have been less alarming than nothing at all. She lay motionless, staring straight ahead, her face so pale and her eyes so lusterless she might have been a corpse. Dr. Hamish flashed Rafe a worried look, then stepped to the bed and retrieved the emergency buzzer. After ringing for a nurse, she rewound the cord on the bed rail. It's going to be all right, Maggie. You have a friend in me and in Mr. Kendrick. We'll help in any way we can. A nurse in pink scrubs rushed into the room. Her rubber-soled shoes squeaked on the tile. Dr. Hamish turned to softly issue orders for medication. During their exchange, Rafe had eyes only for Maggie's drawn face. God only knew what she had endured at Boyle's hands, the only certainty being that she couldn't take much more. Maggie, he said softly, Maggie, can you talk to me? I want to help you, but I need to know exactly what I'm up against here. You can't help me, she said stonily, and then before Rafe realized what she meant to do, she sat up, jerked the IV shunt from the back of her hand, and swung her legs over the edge of the bed. Where are my clothes? The doctor gasped and grabbed for her patient's bleeding hand. Dear God, what are you doing? Leaving. Applying pressure to her hand to stop the bleeding, Maggie stepped down off the stool and headed for the wall locker, the back of her hospital gown flapping. As she threw open the locker and grabbed her jeans, she cast Rafe a determined glance. Could you go and get Jamie for me, please? Even as she spoke, she swayed with weakness. Dr. Hamish scurried across the room. You can't do this, she cried. Maggie shook her off. I am doing it. She braced a hand on the locker to support herself as she bent to thrust a foot down one pant leg. At the effort, her face lost even more color. I have to get back to Pryor before Lonnie does so I can get my sister out of there. Rafe couldn't move. He had the oddest sensation, as if the tile beneath his feet had turned to water and he was about to sink. Over the last 2 days, he'd been assaulted by one inexplicable feeling after another about this young woman, and now, in a heartbeat, they were all hitting him at once. I'm sure your sister will be fine for a day or so, Hamish insisted. You're very ill, Maggie. You can't leave here without receiving treatment. Write a prescription for pills, Maggie retorted as she worked the jeans up over her slender hips. If I don't get my sister out of there, Lonnie may hurt her to get back at me. That's the way he operates. The doctor seized Maggie's elbow to help steady her. Let's not overreact. We've other options. Calling the police is one of them. And isn't your mother living in the home? Surely she'll look after your sister until we can work through appropriate channels to get the child out of there. Her movements jerky with urgency, Maggie snapped her jeans and bent to collect her socks and shoes. I can't call the police. They might take one look at that adoption agreement and hand Jamie over to my stepfather. She tugged on the sock and shoved her slender foot into a sneaker. Then it'd take months, maybe even years, for me to get my baby back. I admit there may be an element of risk, the doctor conceded, but calling the authorities is still your best bet. I'll intercede on your behalf. It's obvious you've been physically abused. They'll see that and take steps to help you. Tightening her grip on Maggie's elbow, Dr. Hamish added, don't put me in this position. If you persist in trying to leave, I'll have no choice but to sedate you, and I really hate to have to do that. Maggie hesitated in putting on her second shoe to glance up, the haunted, hopeless look in her eyes nearly breaking Rafe's heart. So, you're going to save me from myself? What about Heidi, Dr. Hamish? She asked in a quivering voice. Can you intercede on her behalf as well? The doctor's lips parted as if to speak, but then she simply stood there saying nothing. You see, Maggie said softly, it's not just me and my baby. If not for that, don't you think I would have left a long time ago? What pushed you into leaving this time? Dr. Hamish asked. Things came to a head and I didn't have a choice. It was that or lose Jamie. I thought Heidi would be safe, that there was absolutely no way Lonnie could find her. But he did. Rafe took a hesitant step toward her, not entirely sure what he could do to help her, but convinced he had to do something. She squeezed her eyes closed, her face twisting with anguish. I wanted to bring Heidi with me, but Lonnie isn't stupid. He knew I might try to leave, so he took all my money and charge cards before he went to bed that night and locked them in his nightstand drawer. My boss floated me a loan, but she's only the truck stop manager, not the owner. She gave me all that she could, but it still wasn't enough for me to get settled someplace. Rent, deposits, food. I had no choice but to take Jamie, but unless I absolutely had to, I couldn't go dragging a 10-year-old all over God's creation in the dead of winter, not knowing if I could even provide adequate shelter for her. I decided she'd be better off staying with Terry's sister, where she'd be safe until I could find a job and send for her. With the money Terry gave me, all I needed was 1 week's pay. She lifted her hands in a gesture of futility. It wouldn't have been for very long. Only nothing went right. While I was trying to get on the train, it started to move. Jamie was already on board, and I was running to catch up. I slipped on the ice and dropped his quilt and a diaper bag. Everything was in it. Stuff for Jamie, the money, everything. And then I got sick. Now Heidi's back home. I can't just leave her there. Please try to understand that. If we call the authorities, I'm certain there's something that can be done, Dr. Hamish insisted. With shaking hands, Maggie tied her laces and shook her head. Not without proof that she's being mistreated, and trust me, there is none. Lonnie's far too clever for that. Oh, no. So far, he's kept his hands off Heidi. She's his ace in the hole. He uses the threat to her safety as leverage to keep me in line. She straightened, keeping one hand pressed against the locker for support as she gave the older woman an imploring look. I know you mean well, Doctor, but you don't have the whole picture. Do you think I've never gone to the police for help, or to legal aid or children's services? Think again. I've gone so many times they know me by name. What did they do? Nothing. That's the whole point. She pulled her arm from the doctor's grasp and jerked her blouse and bra off the locker hook. Without proof that Lonnie abuses my sister, there's nothing they can do. They couldn't take a child away from her mother without a good reason. Something had to actually happen to her first. And your mother? She won't help? My mother is... Maggie's voice faded, and she slumped against the locker frame, her lashes fluttering as if she were about to faint. After several seconds, she took a bracing breath. When my dad was killed, she had a heart attack. Oxygen deprivation left her brain damaged. She's very childlike now, and her health is fragile. She's a dear heart, and she loves Heidi, but as a protector, she's useless. Rafe remembered the sadness in Maggie's eyes last night when she told him that her life had never been the same after her father's death. Now he could understand why. To all intents and purposes, she'd actually lost both of her parents the same day. Looking at her now, Rafe recalled all the times he had wondered what had happened in her life to make her so distrusting. Now the mystery was solved. At 14, she'd been left with a childlike mother and a baby sister to look after. Toss a creep like Lonnie Boyle into that equation and you had a nightmare. Dear God. Sudden nausea made his stomach roil. Lonnie is clever and manipulative, Maggie continued shakily. He took one look at my mother and saw a life on Easy Street. A not very bright widow with her own home and a little money in the bank. He has Mama wrapped around his little finger now and convinced he's wonderful. She pressed the back of her wrist to her forehead. You saw him. He's a creep. She lowered her arm and blinked. I won't let him do to Heidi what he's done to me. I won't. I'm not suggesting that you should, the doctor assured her, only that you're leaving the hospital isn't the best answer. Maggie shot Rafe a querulous look. Please, Mr. Kendrick, don't just stand there. Go get Jamie while I finish dressing. I don't have much time. With a vague sense of disgust, Rafe realized he was just standing there, and in that moment he knew he had to do something, even if it was wrong. Don't do anything dumb, Ryan had cautioned him on the phone. Only would it be dumb? He could help this girl, and damn it, whether his feelings made sense or not, he cared about her. He hadn't been able to help his own family. A perverse twist of fate had stolen them from him so quickly there had been nothing he could do. but that wasn't the case this time. Rafe barely felt his feet moving as he crossed the room. "You don't need to leave, Maggie," he said firmly. "The cavalry has just arrived." "The what? The cavalry?" he repeated. "In this case, only a one-man army, but I've got clout. Marry me. If I get my name on Jamie's birth certificate and claim to be his father, there's nobody on God's green earth who will be able to take him away from me. Boyle can't prove differently without a blood test, which he'll play hell getting with all the interstate red tape. Meanwhile, I'll make Boyle an offer he can't refuse to hold him at bay. Heidi won't be harmed, I promise." "Marry you?" "It's the perfect solution. Think about it. A precedent has already been set in the courts. These days, a father has rights. If I say Jamie is mine and you marry me to strengthen my legal claim, that adoption agreement won't be worth the paper it's written on without my signature." She shook her head. "Listen to him, Maggie," the doctor encouraged. "Don't reject this offer out of hand. I know you haven't known him for long, but I believe he can be trusted and has your best interests at heart." "I can hire top-notch lawyers and fight it out with Lonnie in court if I have to," Rafe rushed to assure her. "You won't lose your son. I guarantee it." She stared up at him with a blank look on her pale face. "Hire top-notch lawyers? With what?" "I told you this morning, remember, that when I left home, I left a substantial amount of money behind. A court battle would cost a lot of money." Rafe glanced at the doctor. "You called my bank. It'll be more believable coming from you. Tell her." "He's rich," Dr. Hamish told her. "It's true, Maggie. I'm not sure exactly how rich, but I think it's fair to say he's got a bundle." "Rich?" Maggie repeated, her expression incredulous. "A rich boxcar bum?" "Not a bum, a rancher. I still own half of a huge spread in eastern Oregon. 3 years ago, there was a forest fire. The ranch was left financially strapped. To recover, my brother and I parceled off 5,000 acres and sold lots to developers. We split the proceeds between us and our folks. My third was around $50 million, most of which is invested. I've got a lot of money, Maggie. Enough to buy off dozens of Lonnie Boyles and still make change. You understand? Money means power. Marry me, and that power will be in your corner." "Marry you? But that's crazy." It was crazy. Rationally, Rafe knew that. But it was a wonderful kind of crazy. For the first time in so long, he felt alive again. "Really think about this, Maggie," Dr. Hamish urged. "I know it sounds a little archaic, but just imagine all the advantages. I don't know all the details, and it's not my business to pry, but you're obviously in one hell of a mess. And evidently your little sister will be as well if you don't do something. Is running away the answer?" "You've tried that, and look what's happened. Boyle is here, breathing down your neck. You can run again if that's your only option, but whenever possible, it's always best to make a stand and fight back. Mr. Kendrick is not only offering you his protection, but the means to fight this battle and win." Maggie felt as if the world had suddenly tipped off its axis. Her boxcar cowboy was actually a multimillionaire, and he was offering to marry her and use his money to fight her battles. It was like going to sleep and waking up smack dab in the middle of a fairy tale, with her cast in the role of damsel in distress and Rafe Kendrick playing the handsome prince. She leaned more of her weight against the locker, not entirely sure her legs would continue to hold her up. She was dreaming, she decided. The doctor had given her a sedative after all, and she was actually in bed, doped to the gills and having a crazy dream. It was the only explanation. "Why?" she asked dizzily. "Why what?" her handsome prince asked. "Why are you offering to marry me? I can see the benefits for me, but what will you get out of it?" He flushed her a crooked grin. "You." Maggie groaned. "You barely know me. I've got an illegitimate baby and a 10-year-old sister I'm responsible for. You'd be taking on a ready-made family." The instant she spoke, Maggie realized that was exactly it. Rafe Kendrick had lost his wife and children in a car wreck, and he was still grieving. She recalled the expression of yearning she'd seen on his face last night when he looked down at Jamie. Now he saw a way to keep her and the baby with him, a way to make Jamie his very own. Convenient replacements, that's what they would be. It was an insane idea. Maggie could scarcely believe she was actually considering it. Who in her right mind would agree to such a thing? On the other hand, given her situation, who in her right mind would pass on the offer? $50 million? With that much money, he could hire a legion of clever lawyers. Lonnie wouldn't stand a chance. And it wasn't as if Rafe would be getting nothing out of the deal. He'd be getting a son, someone to make him feel needed and necessary again. There was just one hitch. By accepting such an offer, she'd be selling herself, body and soul. Unless Rafe cooperated, there might be no way to call this off later. No walking out. She'd be his wife. Even worse, he would have the ultimate leverage over her, joint custody of her son. She also had Heidi to think about. Where exactly did she fit into this puzzle? "I can't," Maggie said, her voice so faint it seemed to come from a great distance. "It's a wonderful offer, and it would solve most of my problems. But it wouldn't solve all of them, and I just can't." "Name me one reason," Rafe argued. "You've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. I told you, I have to go get my sister." The room seemed to spin. Maggie grasped the open locker door to stay on her feet. Her words seemed to echo inside her head. Please, go get my son so I can finish getting dressed and leave. How will you get to Pryor? He asked. I'll hitchhike. And if you can't catch a ride right away, you're too sick to stand along the highway, especially with a baby to hold. You might pass out. What will happen to Jamie then? Her legs felt like overcooked spaghetti. She was afraid they might buckle. Oh, God, he was right. She was too sick. If she left the hospital, she might never make it to Pryor, and where would that leave Heidi? I have to go get her, she cried. I can't leave her there. I have no intention of leaving her there. His voice seemed to surround her, deep and warm and so wonderfully strong. We'll get custody of her and bring her to live with us, Maggie. You've got my word on it. We'll make that part of our bargain. And meanwhile, I swear to you on everything that's holy, Boyle won't hurt her. I'll make damn sure that she's safe. How? You don't know, Lonnie. He's a snake. You can't trust anything he says. As if he sensed she was about to fall, Rafe gently encircled her waist and drew her against his chest. For the second time since meeting him, Maggie leaned into him, too weak to stand alone. Honey, trust me just a little. I swear to you that Heidi will be safe. Just say yes. You'll have no more worries. No more worries. That sounded so wonderful, so absolutely wonderful. She was so awfully, horribly tired, and he was offering her a solution to all of her troubles. All she wanted was to close her eyes and let him take care of everything. But at what cost? She murmured aloud. What do you mean? I'll be so indebted to you. How will I ever pay you back? You don't have to. I'll never miss the money. Yes, she insisted. No free rides. I pay my own way. I've told you that. Oh, God. What was she doing? Was she actually about to accept this offer? Yes, God help her, yes. Heidi would be safe. She and Jamie would be safe. It wasn't as if she had a host of choices. This was it. If I do this, I have to know you'll keep track of every penny you spend. Trying frantically to clear her head, she said, and I want you to agree to it in writing. You want a prenup agreement? Is that what it's called? Yes. Then that's what I want, a prenup agreement stating that if this doesn't work out, we can go our separate ways with the understanding that I'll reimburse you for all you've spent and that you won't make things difficult for me about leaving. She managed to lift her head and look up at him. That's the only way I'll agree to such a thing, if I know I'm going to be paying my own way. Done. Maggie hadn't expected him to agree so easily. You're sure? It's fine by me. She had a bad feeling he was only saying that so she would say yes, that he had no intention of letting her work to pay her own expenses. I'm dead serious about this. Until I'm able to wait tables again, is there anything at your ranch that I can do to earn a wage? He muttered something under his breath and then shrugged. You said you're good at bookkeeping. I hate paperwork. You can be my in-house accountant. It sounded like a job he had dreamed up just to keep her happy. Someone else has been keeping your books, obviously. It has to be something extra that I can do, something that's a real contribution, not just a pat on my head to make me feel useful. Dizzily, she tried to think of an alternative. I'm a good housekeeper. That position's filled. He searched her gaze, his eyes delving deeply. It's true that Ryan and I have always kept the books, but neither of us are fond of the job or very good at it. It'd be great to have someone really keep on top of it for us, especially if you can learn the cattle business and chart information so we can see how we're doing at a glance. I always just dumped the receipts in a drawer and tried to make sense of them later. Ryan didn't bother to do that half the time, so our records were never very accurate. And if I do a good job, you'll pay me the going rate? All on paper, of course, to apply it against my debt. You'll call around to see what a good accountant usually gets and be agreeable about paying that? Jesus Christ. Are we going to negotiate wages right now? He stared down at her. All right. Sure. The going rate. I can learn the cattle business, she assured him. I'm quick to pick up on things. Then pick up on this, he said, lowering his voice for her ears alone. I get a wife and child in this bargain, and if you think I won't do everything in my power to make sure you want to remain my wife, think again. I don't make a commitment like this lightly, Maggie. She could tell by his expression that he meant it. No, of course not. Neither do I. But I'm not willing to make a lifelong commitment until I'm certain we can make it work, either. We barely know each other. In the event that we separate, I need to know I've brought as much into this as you did, and that you won't be blowing a bunch of money with nothing to show for it in the end. I'll be giving Jamie my name. He reminded her, the moment I do that, he'll be my son in every way that matters, and prenuptial agreement or no, he'll always be my son, even if you decide to leave me. In my estimation, a child is a bona fide contribution, and I'll be more than adequately reimbursed for my expenditures. There's also the possibility we'll have a baby of our own. How can you worry that you're not bringing anything worthwhile into the relationship? Until that moment, Maggie had been thinking that this would be a platonic arrangement. You mean you want this to be a real marriage? Rafe glanced at the doctor. Can you step outside for just a moment? When I get her back into bed, I'll holler for you. He watched until the doctor had exited and closed the door. His steely blue eyes gleamed with determination when he looked back down at Maggie. Yes, a real marriage. I don't do things halfway, especially not something like this, and I'll explain why. It may take months for all the legalities to be finalized. In that time, Jamie and I will start to bond. Even little guys can form strong attachments. I don't think it's fair to let him be around me and start to love me unless we're both going to put 100% of our efforts into making this work. If it doesn't, he went on, then sure, we'll have no choice but to call it quits, and I'll have to settle for visitation privileges. But we owe it to him and ourselves not to go into this with the thought that it's a stopgap measure. Don't you agree? Maggie did agree. She was just so swimmy-headed that she hadn't thought about how all of this might affect Jamie emotionally. I'm just not real comfortable with, well, you know, sex, you mean? He smoothed his hand over her hair. Honey, if you do this, you'll be trusting me with so much. Don't you think you can trust me about that as well? He was right. She'd be trusting him with everything. Held so gently against him, she was beginning to feel like a pat of butter melting over a flapjack. She didn't know how much longer she'd be able to stand. Her body felt disconnected from her brain, and she was afraid she might pass out. Before that happened, she had far greater concerns than her own well-being to consider. Promise me again that you'll get Heidi out of there as fast as you possibly can, she whispered. Promise me, or there's no deal. I promise. Hell, I'd go get her now if I could, but snatching a child and transporting her over the state line is a serious offense. I have to know she'll be safe. She's only 10 years old, and she never asked for any of this. She'll be safe. That I can guarantee. And before you know it, she'll be with us, Maggie. Consider it done. Maggie could only pray it would prove to be that simple, but a part of her feared that Lonnie couldn't be so easily handled. How do you plan to do it? He swept her into his arms. Maggie gasped and clung weakly to his shoulders. As he carried her toward the bed, he said, I'm just going to jump in with both feet and follow my instincts. I've been out of circulation for a while, but I'm an effective negotiator. I can handle Boyle. You concentrate on getting well. I'll take care of everything else. As he carefully deposited her on the mattress, Maggie searched his dark face, a part of her fearing that she'd just struck a bargain with a madman. What other explanation was there? She'd known him only 2 days, and he wanted to marry her? Oh, God. What had she done? I'm not Susan, she whispered, fighting to keep her eyes open so she could hold his gaze. Take a long, hard look at me and know what you're doing, Mr. Kendrick. Susan's dead, and so are your children. Jamie and I will never be able to replace them, and it isn't fair to ask that we try.
He'll be good.
Using the bed rail, he braced his weight with one arm to cup her chin in his hand. His hard, leathery fingers felt feather-light and cool on her skin, yet vibrant with latent strength. I know exactly what I'm doing, Maggie, and I don't for a moment have you confused with Susan. Maggie wished she felt as certain of that as he seemed to be. I can't pretend to be someone else, that's all. I want you to be sure you understand that. I'm me, and I'll never be able to fill her shoes. I don't expect you to try, he assured her. You're sweet and beautiful, Maggie. No man in his right mind would want you to be anyone but exactly who you are. And I'm definitely not out of my mind.
All right, and that's our reading for tonight. So, Ruth, who do we got with us?
Well, we got the Father, Son, Holy Ghost, Band of Angels. We got you, Sister Emily, Jim, your Uncle Sandy, and me.
All right. So, guys, what do you think tonight? Any questions or comments?
Well, I liked it, Ken. The only thing is I've read it before, so I gotta be honest. I love it anyway. Here comes Sandy.
It's a good book.
All righty.
I'd like to get that book and listen to it all the way through.
Yeah, well, that's what we're doing is eventually we'll be on these programs listening to this book all the way through.
Okay.
So,
good deal.
You know, when you're not on doing your program or whatever, that's what we'll be doing is listening to this book, going through the whole thing. Okay, Emily, what'd you think?
That was cool.
All right.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't mean to do that one on there.
Yeah, well, you can't outdo Katherine Anderson. She always touches the heartstrings, and you'll love every one of her books.
All right. So.
Oh, by the way, Ken, while I was on mute, we had my other phone go off. And basically, I got a phone call for a prayer request for my Aunt Lois.
Okay.
They had to rush her to Geneva Medical because her, all of a sudden, she spiked a real high fever.
Yep.
Kenny?
Yeah.
I have Phyllis Chenault's family, also Martha Wolfgang and Shirley Wolfgang, all have passed away in a short time together. So praise all the family.
Yep. So just want to remind everybody once again, because it's the last Thursday of this month, which is next week, is when Sandy here is going to be on doing his handyman thing. So you guys want to join him for that for next week. That's when he's on. And so hope everybody joins us for next week, next Thursday, 9 p.m. right here at the Jumbo Braille Program. And get your questions together. Don't be shy to ask. Just don't make it just one little question for him. Have a bunch of them ready, of questions that you've just been dying to know, okay? That way we can run him through the little grinder and see if we can get him, see if he's on his toes, all right? So that'll be next Thursday. And
basically put him in the hot seat, huh?
Yep, he'll be on the hot seat next Thursday. So we'll see what kind of things he's got.
And he's not on the roast seat either. He's a good man, and I'll back him up. This guy can do it. And Kenny, both of them are actually good handymen. So get ready for a good show.
So we're going to see what kind of stuff he can give you, and we'll have a good show next Thursday. But for right now, if there's no further comments, we're going to get ready to close out of here and meet you tomorrow night for the Talk with Missionary Ken and Ruth Wolfgang show tomorrow night, Bible College on the Air, with no homework at 9 p.m. here only on the Six Eyes Radio Network.
And I know I get too funny, I might get homework, huh?
Yeah. Okay. Anyone got any other comments?
Yeah, if I want to make homework, I might, but I'll try to make it easy because Bible prophecy is not real easy to really get into unless you want to pray about it. It's hard. I've done it for years, and it's hard. It's really hard to learn, so probably best I don't give you guys homework right away. Maybe as we go on, if we do it, yeah, could be.
All right. So any other comments tonight? All right.
No, that was it.
All right. Looks good. So we'll catch you all tomorrow night. God bless everybody, and see you tomorrow. Good night.
Have good sleep.
Good night.